All right. Good morning, everyone. And I suppose good evening to our witness. Let us proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honor. Charles Jordan on behalf of Paul Watson, and we call Eleanor Lister.
Ms. Lister, we're going to administer an oath to you right now. Can you see the courtroom deputy?
Hello?
Yes, I can. Okay.
Can you please raise your right hand? Do you solemnly affirm that the statements you are about to make in the case now before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Please state your full name for the record.
My full name is Eleanor Marie Lister.
Thank you.
Good morning or good evening, Ms. Lister. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. Could you tell us where you are currently?
I'm in Jersey, Channel Islands.
Okay. Could you repeat that, please?
Jersey, Channel Islands. Can you hear me okay?
I believe so. what is your nationality, Ms. Lister?
My nationality is British.
And where's your principal place of residence? I don't need your address, just the country.
Jersey, Channel Islands.
All right. And what's your age?
22.
And could you give the court a brief description of your education?
Yes. I went to secondary school, and then I proceeded on to college. And that's when my education finished.
Okay. Are you currently employed?
I am, yes.
And where are you employed?
I work in a chocolate shop.
Okay. when did you first become involved with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
July 2011.
Okay. And can you describe the circumstances, how you became involved with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Yes. One of the ships, the Bijou Bado, came to Jersey, my home island, and I left with them.
Okay. and how did you come to, what was the process for joining that vessel?
One of the crew members was outside. I knew that I would like to join the organization at some time in the future, so I saw an opportunity to speed up that process, and handed in an application form, and then I was accepted as a crew member.
All right, and when did you depart on that vessel?
On the 11th of July, 2011.
Okay, and which vessel was that?
The Brigitte Bardot.
Okay, could you give us an overview then of your participation with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society up until, but not including Operation Zero Tolerance, anything that you had to do with Operation Zero Tolerance?
Of course. I left with the Brigitte Bardot out of Jersey, transited on the Bardot up to Scotland, where the transit took 3 days. After 3 days, we arrived in Scotland. I transferred onto the Steve Irwin. Then the Steve Irwin left port. We travelled up to the Faroe Islands, where I participated in the anti-whaling campaign up there. And then we proceeded on to Australia, ready for Operation Divine Wind, which was the 2011-2012 Japanese anti-whaling campaign. After that finished, we returned to Australia, and I departed the vessel.
During that period, were you a paid employee?
No, I was volunteer the whole time.
And when you returned from Australia, did you return to Jersey Island?
I did, yes. I returned back home to Jersey.
And who paid your airfare?
I paid my entire travel home.
Okay. All right. Now, did you participate in Operation Zero Tolerance?
I did participate in Operation Zero Tolerance.
Okay. When did you first return to any vessel in connection with Operation Zero Tolerance?
I returned back to the Steve Irwin September 2012.
And where was the Steve Irwin in September 2012?
The Steve Irwin was in Melbourne, Australia.
All right. And when you returned to the vessel, what was your position?
Deckhand. When we're in port, everyone's a deckhand.
When you were previously on the Steve Irwin, were you a deckhand as well during Operation Divine Wind?
Correct.
Okay. And when did the Steve Irwin leave port?
Roughly the beginning of November.
Beginning of November. What did you do from the time that you joined the Steve Irwin in September until the vessel left port?
We prepared the ship to be ready for Operation Zero Tolerance.
Who was the captain during that period?
During the period when we prepared the ship?
Correct.
There was no captain, not while we were in port.
Who did you report to?
Reported to the bosun.
When you returned to the Steve Irwin, were you a paid employee?
No, I was volunteer.
Have you ever been paid by Sea Shepherd, any Sea Shepherd organization?
No, I've never been paid by Sea Shepherd. I've always been a volunteer.
Who paid your airfare when you returned to the vessel?
I paid my entire travel back to Australia and back to the vessel.
Okay, so after the vessel left port, did you know where the vessel was going when it left port?
You mean for Operation Zero Tolerance?
Correct.
Not originally, no.
Okay, where did the vessel go?
American Samoa.
Okay, and how long was it in American Samoa?
I can't remember exactly. No more than a couple of weeks.
Okay. Who was the captain of the Steve Irwin during this voyage from Australia to American Samoa?
Captain Sid. Siddharth Chakravarti.
Okay. Siddharth Chakravarti. What was your position on the Steve Irwin when you rejoined for Operation Zero Tolerance?
I was a deckhand.
Okay. Did that position change at any time?
It did. After we left American Samoa, I became a quartermaster.
Okay. And why did that happen?
One of the quartermasters discovered that she was extremely seasick, so she had to leave the vessel, and they needed someone to fill the role.
Okay. So what does a quartermaster do on the Steve Irwin?
A quartermaster's job is to assist the mate doing the majority of the small jobs that so that the mate can focus on safe navigation. So a quartermaster is responsible for logging position in a logbook,
Could
occasionally navigating.
Excuse me, could you repeat, I don't think the court reporter was able to take down what you said a moment ago. If you could just back up a sentence and go forward with the job description.
Yes, of course. So a quartermaster's job is to assist the mate doing all the small jobs so that the mate can focus on safe navigation of the ship. So a quartermaster's job is to plot our position in a chart book, in a log book, plot our position on a chart, occasionally navigating the ship, watching out of the window for icebergs, and just generally assisting the mate, however necessary.
Where is the quartermaster stationed?
Up on the bridge.
Okay. did you stand a watch on the Steve Irwin?
I did, yes.
What is the watch system on the Steve Irwin?
There are three watches. So the first watch is 12:24, so that's 12 a.m. to 4 a.m. The next watch is 4 till 8, so 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. Then the final watch is 8 till 12, so that's 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., and then the watch continues in a cycle again, so 12 a.m. to 4 p.m., 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., 8 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Okay. And what was your watch on the Steve Irwin?
My watch was 4 till 8, so I've done 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then 4 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay, so you stood 8 hours of watch every day, is that correct?
That is correct.
And that watch was spent on the bridge, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. When the vessel left American Samoa, who was the captain of the vessel?
Siddharth Chakravarti.
Okay. At some point, did Paul Watson join the Steve Irwin after the vessel left American Samoa?
Correct.
Okay. And was there any announcement when Mr. Watson rejoined the vessel?
Yes, we knew that he was coming on board.
How many days after departing American Samoa did that happen?
I don't know.
Okay.
I can't remember. Maybe a few weeks.
Okay.
I can't remember.
All right. Did you have an understanding of what Mr. Watson's position was when he rejoined the vessel?
I can't remember what position he took up. I can't remember if Sid remained captain or if Paul was captain for a small period of time, or I can't remember.
Okay. So at some point did you become aware that an injunction had been issued by a U.S. court concerning conduct of the vessels in Operation Zero Tolerance?
Correct.
Okay. How did you become aware of that?
Remember how I personally became aware of it.
Did you understand that as a result of the injunction that there would be changes in the command of the Steve Irwin?
Correct. The crew became aware that Siddharth Chakravarti would be captain for campaign. Paul Watson would not be captain for campaign.
Okay. Did you have any understanding as to the participation of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society as a result of the injunction?
Can you reword that?
Well,
let me understand the question.
Let me ask you first, as to the previous question, the change in command of Operation Zero Tolerance, how did you hear about that?
I can't remember. My watch, the 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. watch, a lot of the ship's meetings took place at like 7 p.m. 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. So for a lot of meetings, I was on watch and therefore did not attend a lot of them. So it's possible that these things were discussed in a meeting and I just wasn't present.
Did you have an understanding that... could you repeat that last little bit? The court reporter missed that. I was talking on top of you.
Yes, of course. I just said so I can't personally remember how I found out.
Okay. Did you have an understanding that there were meetings where this change in command was announced?
Your Honor, this calls for hearsay.
Overruled. You can answer the question.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Did you have an understanding that there was that there were meetings, a meeting or meetings, where this change in command was announced?
Correct.
Okay. did you have an understanding as to any changes to your status on the vessel as a result of the injunction?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Did you have an understanding as to any changes in your status as a result of the injunction?
I don't think I understand the question.
When up until the time of the injunction, were you a Sea Shepherd Conservation Society volunteer?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Did you have any understanding one way or another as to any participation or any participation by Sea Shepherd Australia in Operation Zero Tolerance?
Correct. We were told that Sea Shepherd Australia would become in charge of campaign and that the campaign directors would be Jeff Hansen and Bob Brown of Australia, of Sea Shepherd Australia.
Could you repeat after deckhands, or could you repeat your answer again, please, Ms. Lister? We had trouble taking that down.
Yes, of course. We became aware that Sea Shepherd Australia would be in charge of campaign, and that Jeff Hansen and Bob Brown of Sea Shepherd Australia would be campaign directors.
And from whom did you learn that?
I can't remember how I found out.
And did you have any understanding as to any changes in your status relative to your volunteer status as a result of the injunction and this change of command to Sea Shepherd Australia?
I don't think I understand the question.
Well,
what do you mean by my status?
At some point, did you understand that you had become a Sea Shepherd Australia volunteer as opposed to a Sea Shepherd Conservation Society volunteer, or did you have any understanding one way or another?
That's leading.
Sustain.
I don't think I realized that there was a difference. I just became aware that Sea Shepherd Australia would be in charge of campaign.
Okay.
I guess I didn't really think about the fact that that would make me a Sea Shepherd Australia volunteer instead of a Sea Shepherd.
Okay. Did you have any understanding of the terms of the injunction?
Yes.
And what did you understand the terms to be?
None of these Sea Shepherd ships were to go within a certain distance of the Japanese whaling ships.
Did you have any understanding whether the Steve Irwin would comply with those terms?
Steve Irwin was going to comply with those terms.
And where did you learn that?
I can't remember how I learned, but it was made aware throughout the cruise that we were going to comply with the injunction.
What was your reaction to the injunction?
My reaction to the injunction, I wondered how it was going to affect campaign, and you know, would it affect our being successful in campaign? And on a personal level, I wondered how it would affect me as an individual.
And did you do anything to address your concerns?
I did, yes.
What did you do?
I went to, Sid made it that we could go and speak to him if we had any questions.
Could you repeat your answer again, please? Again, we had trouble taking it down.
Of course. Sid had made it so that if we had any questions, we could go to him. And so I did. And I expressed my concern on an individual level. He reassured me that I wouldn't have anything to worry about, but still, you know, left me with the choice that if I wanted to, I could disembark the vessel.
Okay. I take it you remained with the vessel?
I did, yes.
Okay. After the injunction was issued, did you see...
Excuse me for a moment. I wonder if you could explore in a little bit more detail the nature of that conversation.
Yeah. Ms. Lister, do you have any other recollection of any other details of the conversation with Captain Chakravarti when you were discussing your concerns about the injunction? Is there anything else that you could add to your testimony?
If you don't mind, maybe I can take over. Ms. Lister, when you went to Sid Chakravarti, what did you say to him?
I can't remember, like, you know, exact words, but I expressed concern about... obviously, at the time I was only 21. Ignorance meant that I didn't fully understand what the injunction meant for me as an individual. I was concerned, you know, would this mean that when I went home I'd be arrested? You know, kind of silly things, but things that I needed answers for that I didn't understand. You know, would it affect my chances of going to the United States, for example? They were just pretty simple questions, but just things that I needed clearing up.
And what did Mr. Chakravarti respond when you raised those concerns?
He took them on board. He understood what I was asking. It was a very casual conversation. He reassured me that, for starters, it had nothing to do with individuals on the ship. He reassured me that I'm trying to remember the conversation. He reassured me that I shouldn't have anything to worry about, that... it shouldn't affect, you know, I definitely won't be arrested. I will be able to return to the United States or go on holiday to the United States. And he left me with the option that if I wanted to leave the ship, you know, to safeguard my own legal status, that... Those were his words, that the option was there, and he would like a decision by the next day. And then the conversation was very short.
Did he mention at that time that he believed that there would not be a violation of the terms of the injunction? Well, I think you said earlier that you had learned that the Steve Irvin would comply with the injunction in the sense that it would not go within 500 yards of one of the Japanese vessels. And did he say to you, you don't really have to worry anyway because we don't intend to go within 500 yards of the vessels?
We were going to comply with the injunction. We weren't going to go within the limit.
All right. So was that a reason why you felt reassured that you had no personal potential liability?
I think the reason I felt scared was more just out of not knowing the situation, not knowing what it meant, I've never heard of the word injunction before in my life. So I think that was more what I was scared of, not, you know, really anything else. I just needed to, you know, completely understand what an injunction was, you know, what it meant.
Right. So, but he told you you didn't have to worry about being unable to come to the United States or arrested one reason was that there was not going to be a violation of the injunction.
Yes, he said we're not going to violate the injunction.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Lister. I'm going to let the lawyer now ask some more questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. After the injunction was issued, did you see Paul Watson about the vessel?
Yes, occasionally.
And where did you typically see him?
Majority of the time it was down in the mess, eating dinner or watching TV.
Down in the mess. After the injunction was issued, did you ever see or hear Mr. Watson give any instructions or commands to anyone on the Steve Irwin?
I didn't see him give any instructions or commands to anyone, no.
Okay. You were stationed on the bridge of the Steve Irwin during your watch, as you testified. Could you describe the bridge of the Steve Irwin, please?
Yes. So you have to go up some stairs, some spiral stairs, like square cut stairs.
Ms. Lister, could you repeat that last word? You said something about the stairs. We didn't take that down.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, like square cut stairs, like go up a set of stairs, turn to the side, and then go up another set of stairs.
Okay.
Then you walked through a door into the communications room, and the room was probably about the size of maybe like a bathroom, so sort of maybe like 3 meters long, like 2 meters wide or something, and then you went through another door, and the bridge was probably about the size of an average bedroom, and it had a door on the far left, a door on the far right, that went outside to the bridge wing. The captain's helm was right outside the door, or right inside the door after you leave the communications room. There was a desk in the middle, on the sort of left-hand side. The windows went around the bridge for a panoramic view of whatever's outside.
Ms. Lister, we missed a word a couple back, something about the windows, I'm sorry.
Sorry, panoramic view of outside.
Okay.
And then there was just a like long table that went across the front of the bridge. On the right hand side was where we kept the charts and stuff.
Okay.
On the left hand side was just empty.
Thank you. So you mentioned that the captain's helm was as you came out of the door. Is that the forward end of the bridge, or where is that located?
It's pretty much just smack bang in the middle of the bridge.
Okay. When you were standing your watch, did Mr. Watson ever come to the bridge?
Occasionally, yes.
Okay, and what would he do on the bridge?
He would come up, look out the window. If we'd seen whales or dolphins, he was always interested to see what they were. Occasionally, he would stay for a couple of minutes, make a joke, leave us with a riddle or some trivia about history or science or something. And then shortly after, he would leave.
Okay. Again, did you ever see or hear him give any orders when he came up to the bridge?
The whole time I was a quartermaster and on the bridge, I never saw him give commands or anything to watch officer or the other ships.
Okay. Were you, as a crew member, able to receive internet on the vessel during Operation Zero Tolerance?
No.
And why not?
There was an internet restriction.
Okay, so if Mr. Watson was posting on Facebook or other sites, would you have been able to read those?
No.
Okay. And why was there an internet restriction, do you know?
Yes, I do know. There was an internet restriction because we wanted to keep our position as secret as possible. If someone released our coordinates or accidentally said, oh, hey, Mom, there was this iceberg and it was like 16 miles long, that might be trackable. Weather conditions could be trackable. So we just wanted to, restrict the possibility of our position becoming public.
When you saw Paul Watson on the occasions in the mess or when he came to the bridge, did he ever give pep talks, try to fire the crew up about Operation Zero Tolerance, anything of that sort?
I never witnessed him trying to give pep talks about the campaign or fire up the crew members, no.
Did you have any conversations with him at all?
I had a few conversations with Paul, yes.
And what did you discuss?
History, science, maths, just...
What was the last one? Ms. Lister, the last word was maps?
We had a conversation about algebra once.
Oh, math. Okay. Math. Right. Okay.
Excuse me. We're trying to translate your perfect English into our imperfect American, so we're having a little trouble doing that.
Thank you. The conversations were completely unrelated to camping.
Okay. Ms. Lister, there were encounters between the Steve Irwin and the Japanese whaling vessels on February 19th, 20th, and 25th. And by a stipulation, by agreement here in this hearing, we're not going to talk about the details of those events, but I'd like to ask you, do you recall those encounters?
I do recall those encounters, yes.
Okay. And by encounters, I'm referring to events where the vessels came in close proximity to one another, the Sea Shepherd vessels and the Japanese whaling vessels, all right?
Okay.
how long, generally, did those encounters last?
They pretty much lasted... most of the daylight. They'd probably start at, I don't know, maybe 9 a.m. or something, and then run through to probably 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, or 5 o'clock,
okay,
depending on the day.
Now, would you have been stationed on the bridge during those encounters on your during your watch?
Correct. I was on the bridge for the majority of the encounters, yes.
Did you have did you have another role on the vessel other than as quartermaster that would have caused you to be on the bridge when you weren't on watch during these encounters?
During the encounters, I continued my official role of a quartermaster, and I also took on board the role of backup photographer. So during the actions, my role was to remain on the bridge and take pictures of the bridge.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'm a little confused about one thing you just said. You just said that the encounters would typically last from 9 a.m. to 3 or 4 p.m. Did I get that right?
I think so.
Right, all right. So just to clarify for me, and you said you were on the bridge for the majority of that time. And you also stated earlier that you had watch duty and the 4 to 8 watch duty. So the 4 to 8, that 8-hour watch requirement was in addition to the time you spent on the bridge?
Correct, yes.
So between the time you would get off your 8 a.m. watch to the time that you would begin your 4 p.m. watch, was that time spent primarily on the bridge?
Yes.
And then after you'd get off your 8 p.m. watch, that would be the time for you to sleep, I suppose, before your next morning watch. Is that right?
That would be the time.
Okay. Thank you. I just was trying to get the timing straight.
Thank you, Your Honor. During these encounters, did you personally ever see Paul Watson on the bridge?
Say that again, sorry?
During these encounters, did you personally ever see Paul Watson on the bridge?
I don't recall seeing Paul on the bridge at all while I was photographing for the encounters, no.
Okay. Do you know who had command of the Steve Irwin during these encounters?
Captain Siddharth Chakrabarty was in command of the vessel.
Okay. To your knowledge, at any time that you were present on the bridge during these encounters, was Captain Chakrabarty on the bridge?
Correct, yes.
Okay. And were you able to observe what he was doing?
Yes.
Okay. You're a rock climber, aren't you, Ms. Lister?
I am, yes.
And does that have anything to do with why you're not here testifying live today?
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea to break my arm.
Okay.
I didn't really think it was a good idea. I broke my arm.
All right. If the opportunity presented itself, Ms. Lister, would you participate in another Southern Ocean anti-whaling campaign?
I would, yes.
Okay, why?
I guess I agree with what Sea Shepherd do. I'm very passionate about conservation. I think that it's important to conserve and protect these animals. They're extremely valuable and extremely amazing. And if I could be a part of protecting them, part of the campaign that goes towards protecting them, I would do it again.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Lister. I don't have any further questions, Your Honor.
Anybody else from the defense side? Mr. Newport?
Ms. Lister, you remember me, John Newport. We spoke last week when I took your deposition.
I do. Good evening, Mr. Newport.
Hello again. I have a few follow-up questions. And let me begin with your service during Operation Divine Wind. What was your position during Operation Divine Wind?
During Operation Divine Wind, I was in I was a deckhand during Operation Divine Wind.
And who was in command of Steve Irwin during Operation Divine Wind, to your understanding?
Paul Watson, Captain Paul Watson.
Okay. Now, you said you were on the Steve Irwin when it went to American Samoa, and during the voyage from Melbourne to American Samoa, the captain in charge of the Steve Irwin was Siddharth Chakravarti, is that correct?
That is correct.
And then he was the captain of the Steve Irwin on the return voyage from American Samoa to the Southern Ocean, was he not? So, Captain Chakravarti was the captain during the entire time period that you were aboard the Steve Irwin, correct?
By my understanding, yes. He was captain the entire time.
All right. Thank you. Now, the court asked some questions that I want to follow up on. As I understand it, you learned about the injunction, correct?
Say that again?
You learned about the injunction?
Yes, I knew that there was an injunction.
But you don't remember how you learned about the injunction, is that correct?
That is correct.
And then after you learned about the injunction, the next thing that occurred was you learned that the Steve Irwin was going to comply with the injunction. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you don't remember how you learned that either, correct?
I don't know how I learned that. I can't remember.
And then, after that, you had your conversation with Captain Chakravarti, in which you expressed your concerns and he allayed your concerns, correct?
What does allayed mean?
Sorry. You discussed your concerns with Captain Chakravarti, and after your discussion, you were comforted by what he told you.
I wouldn't say comforted. I think that sort of gives the idea that he made it seem like everything was going to be okay. But I definitely felt that I was happy to stay.
But I guess after your discussion with the captain, you no longer had a concern about your personal security or safety in terms of either returning home or coming to the United States or things of that nature.
Straight after the conversation with Sid, I took what he said on board, took it away, thought about it, spent the night thinking about it, and when I woke up the next morning, I was reassured.
And after this conversation with Mr. Chakravarti, did the Steve Irwin then go into port?
Yes.
And when the Steve Irwin went into port, it took on fuel. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And did some crew members get off the Steve Irwin while it was in port?
Yes.
And did you understand that those crew members got off the Steve Irwin in port because they had been given an opportunity to get off the Steve Irwin, just like you had been given an opportunity to get off the Steve Irwin.
Can you rephrase the question?
Yes.
Sorry.
Did you understand that some crew members disembarked the Steve Irwin because they had a concern about what would happen to them if the injunction was violated?
I can't speak for those crew members. I think my personal opinion on it would be that they use the injunctions as an excuse. But I can't speak for those crew members.
Okay, but I guess my point is, not only were you given an opportunity to get off the Steve Irwin, other crew members were given an equal opportunity to get off the Steve Irwin. Is that correct?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Yes, that is correct. We were all given an opportunity to disembark.
And did you ever stop to think to yourself, why should I be worried and get off the Steve Irwin if what I was being told was that the injunction was going to be obeyed? Did you ever stop and think about that?
As I was saying before, I think the main reason that I was concerned was because of my ignorance towards the subject. As I said before Operation Zero Tolerance, I had never even heard of an injunction. I didn't know what it meant, what it involved. So I think that was mostly what my concern was about. Just sort of educating myself, understanding.
All right, thank you. Did you have an opportunity to leave the Steve Irwin and go aboard the Sam Simon to take a tour of the Sam Simon?
I had an opportunity. No, I was on watch during the tour of the Sam Simon.
When you were given the opportunity, who provided the opportunity to you to go aboard the Sam Simon?
I wasn't personally given an opportunity because I was on watch. So my responsibility lay in, doing my job. But I believe the opportunity was just, how did it come about? I think, if I remember correctly, it was, just one of those things that traveled around the ship, oh, we're going over to the Sam Simon, if we want to go on board the Sam Simon.
We lost sound, I think. I think we lost the sound there. Could you repeat your answer, excuse me, your answer about how you learned about the opportunity to go aboard?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, could you repeat it because we lost the audio?
Yes, of course. I think it was just one of those things that traveled around the ship. We were given the opportunity, so it traveled from one person to another. We're going for the Sam Simon. If you want to go, make sure that you're ready, and there'll be an announcement when the boat's ready.
Sorry, I missed what you said about
that. There will be an announcement, and what was after that?
An announcement when the boats are ready, when the small boats are ready.
Did you see Mr. Watson go aboard or disembark the Steve Irwin and go in a small boat to the Sam Simon?
I was on watch, so I couldn't see who was going on the small boats and who wasn't.
All right.
I don't remember sitting on the ship.
Now, I want to talk about when you're on the bridge. Is there a telephone on the bridge that goes direct from the bridge to Mr. Watson's private quarters on board the Steve Irwin?
Uh, there's a phone that goes to every department. So the phone has numbers, and you can press whatever number you want to be transferred. So, for example, the bridge is 1, the galley is number 4, the helicopter is the helicopter department is like A12 or something.
What number is Mr. Watson?
2, I think. I can't remember.
Did you ever answer the phone when Mr. Watson was calling the bridge?
I think once, yes.
Could you repeat the number for the helicopter department? We didn't get that.
I can't be sure what the number was. It was A something.
A or 8?
A.
Thank you. And we may have lost your answer on the whether you ever answered the phone when Mr. Watson called the bridge. Did you ever answer the phone when he called the bridge?
Once, yes. He was looking for another crew member, his niece.
He was looking for his niece, you said?
Yes.
What was his niece's name?
Hillary Watson.
And was she aboard ship?
She was on board the ship, yes. She was on the bridge, so I put the phone down and told her that our uncle wanted that.
What was her position aboard ship?
Say that again?
What was her position aboard the ship?
She was a quartermaster as well.
Did she serve a different watch than you served?
She did. She served 8 till 12.
8 till 12?
Correct.
Is that 8 a.m. or 8 p.m.?
Both, sorry. 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. 8 p.m. to 12 a.m.
All right, thank you. Did you ever see people meeting with Mr. Watson in his cabin?
I didn't personally know.
Okay, and Mr. Watson did have quarters that were very close to the bridge, correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's all that I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from Ms. Lister?
Not from us, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Lister, thank you for appearing in these proceedings. Your testimony has been very helpful, and you are excused.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. We had a discussion yesterday, I think, about proceeding at this time with Peter Riemann. Am I correct there? Have you had an opportunity to discuss among counsel the presentation of evidence?
Yes, I think we have agreed that we'll play a video clip which is combined of what we wanted to show, and it's preceded by testimony that Mr. Riemann's lawyer wanted to have as part of the presentation. So what we're going to do is just begin where counsel, Mr. Riemann's counsel, wanted to have her testimony begin, and we'll just play it straight through till the end, which is where we conclude.
Right. So will what I am seeing now be in chronological order as it occurred during the deposition?
Yes.
Thank you for agreeing to that. That's very helpful to me, I'm sure.
And I don't know how many minutes. I think it's about 6 minutes in total, something like that.
All right. Thanks. Are we?
Is it 1, 6, or 16?
I think it's 16.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
16. Sorry, it's 16.
16. Well, let me just ask before we do this, and this is the last order of business before the morning session. Is there anybody who would like to request a break at this time before we do it? If not, I'm happy to go on, but if anybody would prefer a break, I'm happy to. All right, let's proceed. Can we get this on the bigger screen or not? If not, I can look at it here. It's not going to go there? Okay, I'm going to watch here then.
How did you learn about it?
Turn this one around.
Someone sent it in an email. I believe it's Susan Hawkins.
Okay. We have an audio problem?
Yeah, I'm not hearing.
Oh, now they stopped it.
Why don't you roll it and we'll until you're satisfied, and then we can go back and start again.
Many other names appear in the process.
Yeah, let's go off the record for this technical stuff.
Is it rolling? He wants it rolling.
Brainstorming activity.
Keep it rolling.
When the injunction issued, how did you learn about it? Someone sent it in an email. I believe it's Susan Hawkland. Most things came from Susan like that.
You have the video?
Did you read the injunction?
Yes.
What was your understanding of it?
My understanding was that it was an injunction against Paul Watson, an injunction against Sea Shepherds, the United States. Not to be within 500.
So yards intercept the Japanese fleet. It is not a fantasy. You will was that discussed at board meetings?
No.
Okay. Who came up with the name Operation Zero Tolerance? I can't recall. There were hundreds of emails on the subject. Many other names appeared in the process. And brainstorm activity. When the injunction issued, how did you learn about it? Someone sent it in an email. I believe it's Susan Hawking. Most things came from Susan Hawking.
Did it begin?
Did you read the injunction? Yes.
Please.
What was your understanding?
Beginning, and then. Before we go back, I'm going to go back on the record.
Again,
so when we're ready to go, you tell me, and I'll give you the cue.
You went back to
ready?
Yeah,
yes.
Oh.
Who else, right? I didn't say that. You said that. I'm asking you. You.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks like we got to go back.
You said it. In Wales, the killing will stop. Was that discussed at board meeting?
I'll give you the transcript.
Ready? Back on the record.
When the injunction issued, how did you learn about it? Someone sent it in an email. I believe it's Susan Hawking. Most things came from Susan Hawking. Did you read the injunction?
Yes.
What was your understanding of it?
My understanding was that it was an injunction against Paul Watson, an injunction against Sea Shepherds, United States.
not to be within 500 meters or yards away from, is it meters or yards?
We can show it to the
document. Yeah, that's my understanding. And that Sea Shepherds America should not sort of do that. That's my understanding.
And did you understand the injunction to be an order of the court that would prevent operation from zero tolerance going forward?
That's being a possibility.
What do you mean?
Because the people who were operating it are completely different from Sea Shepherds America.
No, at the time the injunction was issued, you knew that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society was funding the operation, did you not?
But it already
just answer the question.
It already had been funded. That's water under the bridge. You can't change history.
You can prevent the ships from going down there, can't you?
Objection.
No, you say, why do you laugh and say no way?
The board of directors of Sea Shepherds, except for Paul Watson, has nothing to do with the operations whatsoever. Absolutely nothing.
You don't think providing millions of dollars for fuel and ships is nothing?
That had been done already. I was walking under the bridge by the time the injunction came out.
And Peter Hammerstadt was an employee of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, was he not? Was he not?
He was.
Objection, please.
He was.
Raise your voice.
He was an employee of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. And he was subject to the control and direction of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society.
Objection.
Correct? Correct?
Yes and no. It's. But what I mean by that is to tell Peter that he could not operate his vessel in Antarctica, you know, it would just be stupid. It's like it's a stupid statement. It would never have happened. It's an impossibility. He was down there. He was fully funded. He had fuel. He had everything. He was going to go and do what happened.
And did you, as a board member, believe you had the authority to terminate Peter Hammerstadt and remove him as captain of the Bob Barker?
I believe that we had the authority to pay his salary. I don't believe we had authority to do anything else.
Why not?
The issues that happened in the operations were never discussed with the water. But it was never, I didn't even know if it was an employee of the American organization or of the English organization, the Dutch or the Australian organization. I learned that when he was signed. But he was paid out of the United States. I didn't know that before.
Okay. And when he resigned, he could have been removed as captain of the Bob Barker, correct?
Objection.
The board never had such powers.
You don't think the board had the power to fire employees of Sea Shepherd?
Objection. Yeah. Asked an answer.
Technically, but...
Technically, yes.
Technically, yes, but it wouldn't have made a damn bit of difference.
Why is that?
Because he was on board as a captain. He would run his own ship.
Do you think it was his ship?
The way, if you are on a boat, as I understand it, you're the captain, until you get to that harbor, it's your ship.
Do you think as a director of Sea Shepherd, the board of directors could have voted to order Bob Barker to return to port at any time?
Objection.
What do I do?
You can just
do it. Yeah.
Objection, Dave.
It would have made a damn bit of difference.
Because he wouldn't have followed your instructions, right?
It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. It would have made zero difference.
Why do you say that?
Because it's the way this organization is run. It's the way it works. Just the way it works. And it's firstly, the boats are not operated by the U.S. entity. The boats were just run under U.S. flag. The boats are, they are Dutch, Australian, or I think one of them is under the Navajo Nation. They operated by people from all kinds of different countries
And one of them, if I understand it right, remained as an asset base so that depreciation could be done on the U.S. books for tax and compliance with non-profit rules regarding accounting. That got changed to January, but you know, there was no control by the U.S. organization of the ships or what happened on the ships.
Are you telling me that the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society had no control over the vessels, the ship captains, or the crew before the injunction was issued?
I never thought that we would have any formal control. Operations were never discussed.
Operations. Ships don't go anywhere without fuel, do they?
No.
Ships don't go anywhere without captains, do they?
No.
Ships don't go anywhere without crew, do they?
Right.
Ships don't go anywhere without supplies, do they?
Correct.
And the board of directors of Sea Shepherd voted to fund all of those activities before the injunction issued, correct?
That's correct.
And the board had the ability to say to the crews, the captains, everybody aboard those ships, those are our ships, they go where we tell them to go.
Yeah, that's wrong. That's pretty wrong.
Why is that wrong?
Because it's not their ship.
Whose ship is it?
It belongs to Sea Shepherd Australia, Sea Shepherd Holland. I think of the two countries I can't record where the other belong.
And why
don't belong to Sea Shepherd?
Well, why did you have to vote to grant them to those other organizations?
We never voted. They've already granted to them before. Yeah. And the only thing that got transferred was one piece of asset, which was very favorable from a tax perspective for Sea Shepherds America. That was that there would be complete segregation between Sea Shepherds America, because we wanted to follow the injunction.
Why didn't you follow the injunction by telling those ships to stay more than 500 yards away from the ships?
I apologize. I couldn't hear what you were saying.
I was just asking Mr. Rupert to stop pounding the table because it reverberates down on my end.
Because we never had such power. As a board, we never had such power. We were not operating these ships. It's like you can sit here, Mr. Newport, in America, and you can say, you people in that foreign country should behave that way because we're Americans. They don't give a damn. It's the same thing here. We have an organization here that is all we could control was that what happened in the United States. We have no control whatsoever what happened in foreign countries. You can dictate, jump up and down, and say you should. But frankly, there's zero control.
Pretty good.
There's zero control. We helped fund it, but that's walking under the bridge. That was all done before.
Before what?
Before the injunction.
You don't think there was money spent after the injunction?
The only time money was spent was to pay a single bill that was a performance-based contract, and the performance had been made, and hence the money was owed, and the money was sitting in the U.S. account. It was the only one.
So you think that the ships before the injunction could have just sailed off into the sunset and you couldn't do a thing about it?
Right? Objection.
Was there any discussion at the board of directors after issuance of the injunction to issue any directives to the ships, the captains, or the crew about compliance with the injunction?
There was a document sent out by, was it Lonnie that sent it out? I think Lonnie sent, either Lonnie or Susan sent it out, requesting that they follow the injunction and that Sea Shepherds, I think it was Australia and Holland, follow the injunction. I recall that letter, seeing that letter. But beyond that letter, that's what got sent out.
And do you recall that that letter got sent out after Barney Gade was deposed by me?
I don't recall the sequences.
Do you recall what caused that letter to go out?
No, I don't recall the sequence. Did you participate in any discussion as to whether that letter should go out?
No, we don't have different things discussed.
Okay.
Most of us,
how do we segregate Operation Zero Tolerance from Sea Shepherds America? And there were many things that had to happen, and we had to change how the websites were set up and organize this differently and change and segregate everything. And we did the segregation in a very reasonable way. We tried to, you know, make sure that Sea Shepherds America was no way going to be in non-compliance with the injunction. That was the intent of the board.
Why do you think segregation was compliance with the injunction?
Objection, and also to the extent that it revealed attorney-client privilege information.
Why do you think segregation was compliance with the injunction?
Because if you're not responsible for something, and you can't sort of violate something you're not responsible for.
Let me talk about a loaded gun, okay? A gun gets loaded with bullets with the intent that the gun be used to shoot at someone. And you as a board member, have voted to approve buying the bullets. You have voted to approve the people loading the bullets into the gun. And you then get enjoined from using the gun. Do you think it is compliance with an injunction to not use the gun, to turn the gun over to somebody else?
And all the only bullets and ammunition used were used by the Japanese to kill and murder whales. That is the only bullets that are used to.
Is that the answer to my question?
You asked about bullets and guns. Yes, bullets and guns are used by the Japanese to murder whales.
Well, I'm asking you as a former member of the Board of Directors who has received an injunction from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that enjoins Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson from engaging in certain acts, which I analogize to shooting a loaded gun. Do you think it's compliance with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals injunction to then turn the gun over to someone else you know who's going to shoot it?
Objection.
That's not how it happened.
Did you turn over assets to other organizations affiliated with Sea Shepherd?
Objection.
Those assets were already turned over.
They weren't turned over. You had to vote to turn them over, didn't you?
The physical assets on the books. That was a bookkeeping matter. It was nothing else. It was taken care of. The boat was already sailing under, as I understood it from the board meeting, it was already sailing under Dutch flag, and the Dutch had full authority over that vessel, if I understand it correctly, and the bookkeeping matter was just a clean-up thing where you segregated the asset, which had been on the U.S. books for practicality had to do with taxes.
You don't recall reviewing a spreadsheet of specific assets that were in fact transferred, such as rigid inflatable boats? Do you recall reviewing such a spreadsheet?
No.
Do you recall receiving an email in which the spreadsheet was sent to you and asking you to vote to approve a transfer of the assets set forth on the spreadsheet?
Maybe it happened.
Did it happen, sir?
I get 400 emails a day, and you know, it's impossible. You take, multiply that out by 365 days, you get a ridiculous number of emails. I can't recall what's in every email.
Did you consider the injunction to be a serious matter?
No objection.
Did you consider an order of court to be respected?
Yes.
And you believe you respected it by voting as you voted?
Yes.
Explain to me why.
We segregated Sea Shepherd America out from the activities that already were going to happen no matter what that board told.
That's my point, sir. Why did you have to segregate?
Because otherwise we would have had on the website, it would have said Operation Zero Tolerance, and it looked like we collected money for that. We did not do
that. You had to segregate.
Please allow the witness to finish his answer.
You had to segregate in order to, in your view, prevent you from being in violation of the injunction. Isn't that true?
That's what you asked us to do. That's what the injunction asked us to do. Stop doing this. So we stopped doing it.
How do you stop doing it by making it possible for someone else to do it?
Objection.
We didn't make it possible. It was already done. The board had no authority to do things beyond it, what we did. Why didn't the board just say, when the injunction came down, this is the end of Operation Zero Tolerance? You know what? If you got an organization as such as a nonprofit, you operate with an intent. The intent is to stop the killing of whales. To say that, you know, you're going to take people's dreams away from them and, you know, stop and just... Maybe you like to have killers around. Maybe you like to live in a society where people go around and kill each other. I mean, I don't know where you come from, but I want to be proud of myself. I want to feel good about myself. And the other people in the organization have similar dreams. I mean, we may all have different skills at the board level and the operation level, but we have a dream that we're going to stop the killing of whales, okay? That's to say, stop your dream. That's not going to happen.
Thank you. It's the first honest answer I've gotten.
She had the 6 through 7, okay. She hadn't designated that, that's all right.
Does that complete the testimony?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there anything further that we need to address this morning? No. So my understanding is our next witness will be here at 2 o'clock. Are there any matters that the court needs to address before 2 o'clock?
Your Honor, I just had a housekeeping question.
Well, yeah. With that introduction...
Yeah, the drum roll.
It'll be a big one. Yeah.
I just had a housekeeping question. Your Honor informed us yesterday that you're not interested in hearing us on closing, and I just wanted to see what Your Honor had in mind by way of briefing after we're done taking testimony. If you're ready to address that.
I am ready to address that. And I think we touched on this briefly in one of our conferences. It would be helpful for me for each of the parties to prepare proposed finding of facts and conclusions of law in this case. And to the extent you find it that it might be helpful to the court to do so, you may include, in addition to those two matters, a limited amount of argument. I assume that the conclusions of law will encapsulate your argument, but if you wish to have a brief statement that summarizes your position, I would anticipate that would be no more than 5 pages. And that would be like a closing argument. And I will next week maybe hear from you about the timing of the submission of those. I don't want to press you now until we have everything. I think you'll probably be able to make a more informed decision about the timing of those items. While we have a few minutes now, I thought I would ask counsel to see if we can map out our schedule for next week in terms of witnesses, to the extent we know who we need to accommodate because of scheduling of witnesses, and then also the number of witnesses, and to the extent you can estimate it, the amount of time that you would expect. So, Mr. Neupert, it's still your case, although you've been very flexible, and I appreciate that, in allowing other witnesses to testify. But what do you anticipate going forward?
We anticipate calling Mr. Talbot first thing Monday morning, and that would conclude witnesses by the plaintiffs.
Okay. Now, you had expressed earlier your... expectation that you would present Mr. Watson's testimony by submitting deposition testimony. Is that still your expectation?
I actually hadn't thought about the change in circumstances and whether we would call him in our case in chief.
Maybe you can mull over that and we can just touch on that this afternoon. I don't mean to...
Oh, it's an interesting proposition, Your Honor. We have marked deposition testimony from Mr. Watson, but let me think about the court's question at least over the lunch hour.
Right. And, of course, you'll be able to cross-examine him.
Of course.
So, all right. So Monday morning we will begin with Mr. Talbot, and that... subject to Mr. Newbert, or do we know when Mr. Watson is scheduled to appear? If counsel behind the screen wishes to just come out for this. Okay.
our current plan is that Mr. Watson would testify on Wednesday. I have actually a list that we exchanged last evening. I discussed it with Mr. Newbert earlier today, but this is our tentative plan. After Mr. Talbot goes, counsel for Mr. Riemann plans to call him. I understand that that's relatively short, 45 minutes or so.
Mr. Riemann will appear in person as well?
Okay.
Then we have Ms. McMaster and Jeff Hansen, who is coming in from Australia. Mr. Hansen, if we don't finish him, we'd carry over on to Tuesday morning. We have Senator Brown, also from Australia, coming in Tuesday. And then we have one other live witness, Mr. Emko. I expect that to be a short witness. And Mr. Hawken, also a short witness. He would be by video, and we're weighing whether we need to call Mr. Hawken. He's another crew member who's going to be testifying as to whether or not Mr. Watson was giving commands on the Steve Irwin in the campaigns. And then on either late Tuesday or Wednesday, we would call Mr. Chakravarti, who will be live, and Mr. Watson.
Do you anticipate calling any other witnesses for the defense at this time?
There is there is the issue of the two experts still. Those are experts,
yes,
for defendants other than me, so I'll let them speak to that.
All right.
Your Honor, with respect to Mr. Hopkins, we haven't made a final decision yet, but I think we're inclined at this point not to call Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Hopkins was the first witness,
yes,
first expert witness statement, and then Mr. Steele was the second one?
Correct.
So if I recall correctly, Mr. Steele's expert testimony went more to Ms. Hartland.
To Ms. Hartland, yes, Your Honor.
Right, and I had reserved and also expressed my pessimism that it would be helpful. But I think in part it would depend on the length of the testimony and the nature of the testimony, and I will entertain an offer of proof as to the testimony before I make a final ruling. And I think it would those are both local witnesses, correct?
Mr. Hopkins is not a local witness, Your Honor.
Mr. Hopkins is from Kansas City. Mr. Steele is local.
And the other problem is that Mr. Steele is unavailable most of next week, so I would need to line him up. One potential option is that if we have Mr. Steele's report just entered as an exhibit into evidence, if he is not available.
Your Honor, we would object to that for obvious reasons.
Yes, understood. And you have not yet decided about Mr. Hopkins?
We haven't. As I said, I think we're leaning against it based on what we know right now, but
right,
we haven't
right.
made a final decision.
So I am disinclined to hear from Mr. Steele. I've read the report, and as I mentioned earlier, I think both of these experts are very capable, and I just think that the issues here are not necessarily dependent on the kind of expert legal opinion that they can provide. Right now what I want to address is the scheduling issue with Mr. Steele. and maybe if you could check with him and see, since we have a lot to do, and there are many witnesses, and given the way examination is going, it would be wonderful if we completed on Wednesday, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. But if you could check to see if called, whether he could appear on Wednesday afternoon or Thursday, and then report back this afternoon, that at least we'll know if he's available at that time.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Right.
But as to Hopkins, could I at least have 24 hours advance notice of whether you intend to call him?
Is that agreeable to you?
Yes, oh, absolutely. Sorry, Your Honor. I thought he said Hawkins, not Hopkins.
So. Yes, Hopkins. Yes. Sorry. Any other housekeeping matters that we have to address before we take a well-earned recess till 2 o'clock? Oh, and it is 2 o'clock, correct? We do not need to come in early? Okay, good. All right, so we'll stand in recess until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you all. All right, we have some testimony.
Can you please raise your right hand? You solemnly affirm that the statements you are about to make in the case now before this court will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under the pains and penalties of perjury.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your full name for the record.
John McMullen, McMullan.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Katie Madison, and I am counsel for, along with Ms. Davis, for non-party defendant Susan Hartland. Good morning, Mr. McMullen. Can you tell us your county, I'm sorry, your country and your city of residence, please?
I live at 1 Williams Grove, Bond Beach. That's a suburb of Melbourne, Victoria, in Australia. I'm speaking to you today from Queens Road, Melbourne, Victoria.
And what time is it there in Melbourne, Mr. McMullen?
8 a.m. on Saturday.
So you are an attorney, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, I'd like for you to very briefly describe your educational background, just naming your degrees and when they were received.
I have a Bachelor of Engineering from Melbourne University in 1976, a Bachelor of Laws from Monash University in 1980, 81, somewhere there, a Postgraduate Diploma of Law from Monash University around 83, 84, Master of Laws from Melbourne University around 92, 93, somewhere there.
Now, during your career, were you ever employed as an engineer?
I was first employed as an engineer. I graduated in 1976. I worked for 3 or 4 years as an engineer. Somewhere in there, I started part-time law.
Mr. McMullen, we do have a court reporter here who is taking everything that you say down, so it would be very helpful if you could try to slow down just a bit so he can keep up with your testimony and accurately record it. Does that sound like a plan?
Yes.
All right. So you're currently, did you begin at some point practicing law?
I became a professional lawyer in April 1983.
Are you a barrister and solicitor?
Yes. In Australia, in Victoria, we are admitted formally, 100% of the lawyers are admitted formally as a barrister and solicitor of the Supreme Court of Victoria. in practice, barristers are court lawyers, solicitors are office lawyers. I'm a solicitor.
So if you could very briefly synopsize your employment history, please, as a solicitor.
I've been a solicitor since 1983. I've been at a number of law firms. I was at McPherson and Kelly, Phillips Fox, which is now DLA Fiber, Clayton Ukes, and since 1995, 96, I've had my own law firm called McMullen Solicitors.
And what's the nature of your law practice, Mr. McMullen?
Predominantly, I do building and construction contract work, contract preparation, and some dispute work.
Is C. Shepherd Australia Limited a current client of your firm, McMullen Solicitors?
Yes.
And how long has C. Shepherd Australia Limited been a client?
Since about early 2007, somewhere there, I was introduced to Johnny Vasic, V-A-S-I-C. He was a young US-Canadian Sea Shepherd Conservation Society person. He was brought in to see me. I helped him create, I incorporated for him, Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. I've been their lawyer since then.
Was there any active volunteer movement for marine conservation in Australia in 2007?
Yes. As far as I'm aware, there'd been a volunteer movement to do with Sea Shepherd in Australia ever since Sea Shepherd Conservation.
Mr. McMullen, our court reporter did not get what you said. If you could repeat that, please.
Sure, and I'll slow down too. As far as I am aware, Sea Shepherd Australia had been a volunteer movement in Australia since the time that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson started coming down to go down to the Southern Ocean. I cannot remember what year that might have been. I hadn't had any involvement since then, but there'd always been that volunteer movement. By 2007, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society were trying to, I guess, crystallise that entity in Australia, and I therefore helped them to create an Australian corporation. For the next two or three years, the corporation did very little, but the volunteer movement continued and still continues today.
I'd like to show you two documents, Mr. McMullen, Exhibits 505 and 507.
Yes, I see those.
All right. Is Exhibit 505, that is the Constitution of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. Did you prepare that document?
Yes, I did.
And if you can look at Exhibit 507, which is a certificate of registration of a company, is that a document that you prepared and are familiar with?
That's a document that was issued to me in January 2007 by the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, often referred to as ASIC. That's the body in Australia that controls corporations under the Corporations Act.
I'm sorry, Corporations Act.
The Corporations Act is a federal act in Australia. It's the act that controls corporations. That's a certificate issued by ASIC to say that this company has been created.
Did you also prepare articles of incorporation for Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
Yes. In Australia, for some years, we've referred to the document as a constitution rather than we previously referred to it as the Memorandum of Articles, Memorandum of Objects and Articles of Association. But the document 505 is the constitution that was created and forms effectively the aims of the corporation created on that day.
Now, do you know why document 505 is not signed?
I should have a signed copy. I just don't in my records. I cannot say. I took that document down to the ship in late 2006, early 2007 sometime. I'd prepared it. I took it down and I saw it signed. It was signed by Paul Watson, was one of the early directors. Laura Dakin is still a director. A couple of other people I can't quite remember. And I would have signed it. I was the company secretary. And I would have then filed it. We use a stealth company agency to do that, but I would have given it to them and they would have filed it at ASIC.
And what
I don't know why I don't have a signed copy, no.
Let's slow down just a bit. Is there a central governmental agency in Australia where corporation documents are filed?
Yes.
And what is that, please?
Yes, ASIC, A-S-I-C, which is short for Australian Securities and Investment Commission.
Now, is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited a not-for-profit corporation?
Yes. There are a number of types of companies you can create under the Corporations Act. The usual choice, I believe, for not-for-profit companies in Australia is a public company limited by guarantee. You can see from 507 that that's what we created Sea Shepherd Australia Limited as. Historically in Australia, we will use that vehicle for a not-for-profit company.
Does Sea Shepherd Australia Limited have charity status in Australia?
Yes, that's a fairly straightforward registration. You apply for that when we created it. It was applied for and registered as a charity sometime early in 2007.
Now, for the record, does Sea Shepherd Australia Limited pay income tax on its revenue?
No. It's a feature of being a not-for-profit company, registered as a charity. Income tax is not payable.
Now, just for the record, is there a governing Australian statute that you use to incorporate Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
Yes, it's a Commonwealth Act, the Corporations Act 2001. You can see it there in the top left-hand corner on 507.
What was, in general terms, the mission of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
In general terms, it was to support the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson voyages down to the Southern Ocean to oppose Japanese whaling. But if you look at the objects, which I took from the UK Constitution, I was given a copy of that and I used that verbatim to create the Australian Constitution. The objects were very much to do with marine conservation, environment conservation, education in relation to those purposes.
Did you charge a fee to Sea Shepherd Australia for this work?
No, I've been pro bono from the start.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the corporate form of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. Is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited a separate and distinct corporation from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Yes.
Is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited a subsidiary of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
No.
And is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited a parent company of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
No.
Is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited a separate and distinct corporation from Sea Shepherd Netherlands, Sea Shepherd Germany, Sea Shepherd France, and Sea Shepherd UK?
Yes.
Now, you've testified that Sea Shepherd Australia is a separate and distinct corporation from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. And that, under the law, so under the laws of Australia, did the board of directors of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society between January 1st, 2013 through October 31st, 2013 have the right to control the officers, directors, or employees of Sea Shepherd Australia?
No.
Did you ever become an officer of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
Yes. From the time the company came into existence in January 2007, I have been the company secretary. From around about early 2010, I became one of the directors, and I am still a director today.
Now, is there any other attorney other than yourself who provides legal services to Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
I am the only lawyer for the Corporation Australia that I'm aware of, but from time to time I have asked other lawyers and instructed them and retained them to do work for Sea Shepherd from time to time. But predominantly, it's me.
And those would be, sir, other Australian lawyers to perform work for Sea Shepherd Australia?
From time to time, I have asked other Australian lawyers to do work, and they have all been Australians, yes.
Thank you. Now, was there a period, what I would call a startup period of Sea Shepherd Australia after its formation?
From about 2007 till about 2010, the company didn't do anything. It was created, it came into existence in January 2007, but it wasn't used by the Sea Shepherd Australia volunteer movement for anything active that I could see. I had little or nothing to do with the corporation through that period, but as far as I could see, it wasn't used for any active purpose. In about early 2010, it was reformed, the board was created, I became a director, and from that moment on, it was a more active corporation.
What do you mean it was reformed?
I can't say how or why, but in about early 2010, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society Chief Executive Steve Roest, R-O-E-S-T, I think he was British, but he came to Australia. The board was reshaped. I became a director. Steve Roest became a director. Alec Earle, an American Sea Shepherd Conservation Society lawyer from Seattle, he became a lawyer, became a director. And there may have been a couple of other directors, but the board was reshaped and we had a directors meeting. As far as I'm aware, that was the first ever board meeting of this corporation. We had the directors meeting in my office, and since that time we've had directors meeting from time to time.
Did Sea Shepherd Australia begin having regular board meetings after its startup period?
It did. From about 2010, and that happened to be when I was a director also, we would create board meetings from time to time as the need arose. So through 2010, we may have had three or four, I can't remember. I would have been the one who usually arranged those board meetings. They were all by telephone conference. Paul Watson was a director through that phase. We would have the odd meeting, and progressively we started to have more, to the point where now I think we're currently having them about monthly.
Now, by 2010, I understand you're not the finance person for Sea Shepherd Australia. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But are you aware roughly of what the revenue was of Sea Shepherd Australia in 2010 when it became more active?
It's a guess. But my guess is by 2010, we were taking a revenue of around about Australia $1 million, predominantly donations, but also from what I would call volunteer activity, fundraising activity.
If you know, does Sea Shepherd Australia also have educational programs?
Again, I'm not involved, but I am told from time to time different things as a director, and from time to time as Sea Shepherd Australia's lawyer, people come to see me or they email me, so I am aware of different activities in the schools from time to time. I'm aware that Jeff Hansen goes to schools from time to time. I met a woman last year, Hans Siever, S-I-I-V-E-R, a Sea Shepherd Australia person. Predominantly her role is to go to school, so I am aware of some education activities, but I wouldn't know what they are.
Now, let's turn our attention now to the injunction, which is the reason that we're all here today. Did you become aware at any time last December 2012 that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the United States had issued an injunction against Paul Watson and Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Yes, I did.
And do you have any recollection of how you became aware of the existence of the injunction?
I don't remember, but I'm guessing it would have usually been an email from Jeff Hansen, plus Judge Kaczynski's comments were reported in the Australian press. I would have seen those. That may have got me to look at. From time to time, I subscribed to PACER. I may have pulled down the injunction. But fairly soon after the injunction, I had a copy of the injunction. I was looking at it, and I would have been saying to Sea Shepherd Australia people what I thought it meant.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. After reviewing, so you did read, is your testimony that you did, in fact, at some point, read the injunction?
Yes.
And after reviewing the injunction, did you perform any sort of formal or informal analysis about whether the Ninth Circuit injunction was binding against Sea Shepherd Australia Limited under the laws of Australia?
I did. It wouldn't have been anything too formal, but it would have been very soon after I carefully went through the injunction, and I would have had a discussion with Jeff Hansen, at least maybe others, I don't remember, to the effect of what I thought the injunction meant in relation to Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
Now, I'd like for you to tell the court today what your interpretation was of the injunction and what your opinion was about whether, under the laws of Australia, the injunction is effective against Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
My view then and now was, one, the injunction absolutely affected Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson. But I respectfully say, Your Honour, that in my view, the reach of the US courts does not reach an Australian corporation on the high seas. That would have been my view then. That's what I would have said to Sea Shepherd Australia Limited at the time.
Is there any other basis or analysis of your opinion about the impact of the Ninth Circuit injunction in Australia that you can share with the court today?
The basis for that view would have been effectively a view that I believe is correct, that the courts of Australia would not necessarily enforce, would not ever enforce the orders of an international court in the absence of some specific arrangement to that effect. Ultimately, to me, that meant that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited was not caught by the injunction issued in the US courts.
Now, are there any decisions in Australia that you can tell the court about that impacted, and I'm talking about legal decisions from Australian courts, that would have impacted your analysis in determining whether the injunction was effective against Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
What I would have said, I would say it today, is amongst other things, it was unlikely to, well, it was less than likely to me that the Japanese parties to this US litigation would be likely to commence a proceeding in Australia, really more for commercial reasons. There's a famous or well-reported Australian decision in 2008 called Humane Society and a number of Japanese defendants. In the federal court in Australia, a single judge granted an injunction to Humane Society against those Japanese defendants. Effectively, the court was saying that the Japanese defendants were breaching Australian law in the Southern Ocean when they killed cetaceans. The effect of that was that the injunction was granted. In fact, there was a skirmish. It went up to the full federal court and back in relation to the question, what should we do if we were to make an injunction, even if we felt that it was unenforceable? For example, if the Japanese defendants were never to come to Australia, the full court sent it back to the single full court judge and said, single federal court judge, and said, that's not an issue you should take into account. The federal court proceeded to grant the injunction. And for that reason, I would have been saying in December 2012 to Sea Shepherd Australia people, amongst other things, it was less than likely that those Japanese defendants would be coming to Australia to commence proceedings, because if they did, one of their obstacles they would have to face is they would have to deal with the fact of that earlier injunction.
And again, Mr. McMullen, thank you, but if you could slow down just a little bit so the court reporter can get this. Do you regard, or in your analysis, did you consider the interest of the country of Australia in the Southern Ocean campaign?
One of the factors that, to me, may have affected whether an Australian court would give effect to an order of the US courts. At this stage, we had had some reporting on Judge Kaczynski's comments, but we did not have the reasons for the Court of Appeals decision to grant the injunction. And I was guessing that if part of the Court of Appeals reasoning included that the US courts, consistent with the US government, should not recognise Australia's claims to rights down in the Southern Ocean, to me that may have been a factor that would be inclining an Australian court to not enforce such an order against an Australian corporation.
Now, Mr. McMullen, as a barrister and solicitor, you are an officer of the court system in Australia. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And when you're providing your analysis here to the court today, I'm sure you mean no disrespect to the court. Is that correct?
100%. Your Honor, I promise you I say nothing more than my bare analysis of these considerations. It is, Your Honor, it is not a lack of respect.
Now, Mr. McMullen, so you've testified that you reached the conclusion that the injunction was not binding in Australia. Would you have ever counseled Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, its board of directors, or Paul Watson to attempt to evade the Ninth Circuit injunction?
Absolutely not. I would never do that. Not to Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, Paul Watson, or any person.
Would you have ever allowed any member of the Sea Shepherd Australia Limited Board of Directors or its employees to assist either Paul Watson or Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in evading the Ninth Circuit injunction?
No, to the extent that I would have any such control, the answer is no. And were I to become aware of such a thing, I would immediately resign as a director.
About the time of the injunction, in December 2012, did you know who Susan Hartland was?
I'd seen Susan's name from time to time on emails. I don't believe I'd ever spoken on the phone to Susan, but I wouldn't have known what her position was. I hardly ever had any contact with Susan.
At the time the injunction was issued in December 2012, did you know the names or were you acquainted with any of the members of the board of directors of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
No, as far as I'm aware, I never knew. I don't know that I know today.
Now, what did you do, in, if anything, in response to the injunction, Mr. McMullen?
In December 2012, I would have nearly immediately had a telephone call or more with Jeff Hansen. I would have had a number of emails with Jeff Hansen and maybe others, but predominantly Jeff Hansen. And as a result of all that, it became obvious that we needed to address the injunction. At some point, we arranged, and my recollection is that I would have done that, a telephone conference, which we eventually had on December 24. And at some point in that period, I would have had a phone call with Charles Moray. He might have rung me. I might have rung him. I don't remember. But the upshot was that we arranged a telephone conference on December 24.
So that was what we'll refer to as the Christmas Eve telephone conference.
Yes.
All right. Now, during the Christmas Eve telephone conference, do you recall any discussion about whether or not Sea Shepherd Conservation Society or Paul Watson intended to comply with the Ninth Circuit injunction?
I remember very little from memory, but there is no doubt, zero doubt in my mind, that 100% of the telephone conference would have been on the premise that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson were absolutely to comply with the injunction.
Now, you testified that Mr. Moray may have participated in the Christmas Eve telephone conference?
To the best of my recollection, Charles Moray was in the telephone conference, yes.
Okay. And to your knowledge at that time, did Mr. Moray represent Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
Now, just to be clear in my mind, Mr. McMullen, you're not coming here today to tell the court that Mr. Moray was trying to get Sea Shepherd Australia to help Sea Shepherd Conservation Society evade the injunction, are you?
Absolutely not. The purpose of the telephone conference was what do we do given that there is an injunction, given the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson must comply with the injunction. Every part of the discussion was on that premise.
Now, why was it important? Let me back up. Did you have any understanding during the Christmas Eve telephone conference whether Sea Shepherd Conservation Society intended to separate from Operation Zero Tolerance?
Yes. At some point between hearing of the injunction and that telephone conference, I would have articulated with Jeff Hansen and maybe with others, I don't remember, maybe with Charles Moray, I don't remember, but I would have articulated. My recollection is this was my idea, that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited would become responsible for Operation Zero Tolerance. The view I was taking was that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited was beyond the reach of the injunction, and the view I believe everybody took was the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson would absolutely and must comply with the injunction.
Did you have any understanding at the Christmas Eve telephone conference that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society intended to separate from the Operation Zero Tolerance campaign?
Yes.
Now, were there, during the Christmas Eve telephone conference, do you recall any discussion about Paul Watson's plans for continued participation in Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
During the telephone conference, the purpose was to agree the response from that moment in relation to Operation Zero Tolerance. And that means...
Oh, and Mr. McMullen, I'll raise my hand if you're going too quickly. Our court reporter is having some difficulty, so...
During the telephone conference, the purpose was to agree...
I'll slow down.
Could you start over, please, Mr. McMullen? I apologize.
No. I'll slow down. The purpose of the telephone conference was to agree the future of Operation Zero Tolerance. The proposal, which I genuinely recollect was mine, was that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited would do the operation, not Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. The agreement in the telephone conference was that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society would have no part in the operation, that Paul Watson would have no part in the operation, that the Australian Corporation would do the campaign.
And what was your understanding of why Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson would have no participation in the campaign?
Because of the injunction.
Now, I'm going to show you two documents, Defendant's Exhibit 587 and Defendant's Exhibit 587. Was there ever a more formal discussion of the Christmas that followed the Christmas Eve telephone call?
After the Christmas Eve telephone call on 24 December, Sea Shepherd Australia Limited had a board meeting on December 27.
And pardon me, sir, but who called that board meeting?
It would have been me. To the best of my recollection, I would have called that meeting. As a general rule, I would be the one to set up all of the board meetings. They were usually by telephone conference. Predominantly back then they were all by telephone conference. I would set up the telephone conference. I would send the email around to the parties. I would set out the time and the date for it, and I would give the dial-in phone numbers to a telephone conference service that we ran through my law office.
Can you explain to us, Mr. McMullen, why it was important to have a board meeting following the Christmas Eve telephone conference?
The 24 December telephone conference was really only going to what should we do. The 27 December board meeting was Sea Shepherd Australia Limited board formally resolving to do that.
All right. And now if you can take a look at Defendant's Exhibit 589. Is that up on your screen?
Just coming.
Okay. Now, what is that document, Mr. McMullen?
That's minutes of the board meeting from 27 December, Melbourne time. I would have prepared those minutes as I usually prepared all the board minutes.
And who, if you recall, was present at the board meeting?
From recollection, telephone conference, I was in my office, Jeff Hansen would have dialed in, Bob Brown would have dialed in, Paul Watson would have dialed in, Laura Dakin is a board member but she would not, she shows here as an apology, and back then that was, it was rare for Laura to make it to a board meeting, and Charles Morey would have dialed in.
Now, did you prepare exhibit 589?
Yes.
And when were those minutes prepared, Mr. McMullen?
I don't remember, but it would have been pretty much immediately. I would have had them on the screen even while we were doing the board meeting. I was sitting in my office on the telephone. Pretty soon after that, I would have prepared them, and pretty soon after that, I would have emailed them around to the board members.
Did you physically type the minutes?
Yes, I did.
And do you keep the minutes from all the Sea Shepherd Australia board meetings, minutes in your office there in Melbourne, Australia?
Yes.
Were there any decisions or ultimate resolutions reached by Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
At that board meeting, a number of things happened. First, Sea Shepherd Australia Limited resolved to run the Southern Ocean Campaign. Separately, Bob Brown became a board member. Thirdly, Paul Watson resigned as a board member. They would have been the important things.
Why did he resign, Mr. McMullen?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for a hearsay.
Okay. You can rephrase. I'll sustain it.
Okay. What was your understanding of why Mr. Watson resigned from the board?
It was an issue that was discussed at the 24 December telephone conference that Paul Watson, out of an abundance of caution, would resign as a director of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited, so that there could be no suggestion that he was breaching the injunction. That was the discussion we had on 24 December, and at the board meeting on 27 December, Paul resigned as a director.
Now, why can you tell us why Sea Shepherd Australia made the final decision to run the Southern Ocean Campaign and had a resolution at the board meeting on December 27, 2012?
The factors that we discussed at that board meeting, similar to the factors that were discussed during the 24 December telephone conference, I took the unusual step of recording them into the minutes that you can see on that exhibit. But in brief, they were that the Southern Ocean Campaign was ultimately an Australian project. It always had been. The Australian volunteer movement had really been created to assist on that Southern Ocean Campaign. Because of the injunction, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson could no longer be involved in the operation. For that reason, it made sense that Sea Shepherd Australia effectively bring forward the natural progression that it always saw, which was to eventually become the body that was responsible for the Southern Ocean Campaign. For better or for worse, Sea Shepherd Australia Limited always saw the Southern Ocean Campaign as an Australian campaign.
Excuse me, can I ask a clarifying question, please? I noticed in the minutes that the first item is that Paul Watson was appointed chairman at that meeting. Is that the first thing that occurred?
Yes, Your Honor, that's right. That happened at every meeting, Your Honor.
I see. Was this chairman for the meeting or chairman for the whole organization?
Chairman for the meeting is what's recorded in item 1.1 there, Your Honor. It's more a formal thing that, for better or for worse, we tend to include in minutes of board meetings in Australia that a person was appointed really as chairman of the meeting. For example, if Paul Watson hadn't been there that day, it might have been Jeff Hansen, say, or it might have been someone else.
All right. Thank you for that clarification. And then I noticed that the minutes include the discussion about the Operation Zero Tolerance and the purposes, and then a resolution was voted. And then after that, Paul Watson advised the board that he would stand down. So is it true that all the members who were present, including Watson, Hansen, McMullen, Brown, and Murray, well, was Charles Murray a voting member at this meeting?
He was a guest, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor. Charles Murray, I don't even remember Charles speaking in that telephone conference.
But But the other four mentioned, Watson, Hansen, McMullen, and Brown, were all voting members of the organization?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they voted unanimously to adopt these resolutions?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Did Mr. Paul Watson ever participate in any other board meetings of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited after December 27, 2012?
No.
Now, on December 27, 2012, just calling your attention to that date, did Paul Watson have the ability or authority to demand that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited abandon any participation in Operation Zero Tolerance?
No.
And tell me why not, Mr. McMullen.
It's ultimately, it's a decision for the board of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. Sea Shepherd Australia Limited was an entity, it came into existence in January 2007. It has a life of its own. The board members of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited would all, I believe, like I do, take that role very seriously. It was not true that any person, not even Paul Watson, could have directed board members to do anything in relation to Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
As a board member of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited, do you have a fiduciary duty to the non-profit corporation?
Yes. Directors in Australia, I believe, as you do, have a fiduciary duty in relation to all corporations.
Based on your observation, do the directors of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited take that obligation seriously?
Yes.
Now, on December, and I'm just calling your attention to this date, on December 27, 2012, while Mr. Watson, before he resigned, did any board member or employee of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society have the right or ability to cause Sea Shepherd Australia to withdraw from the Operation Zero Tolerance campaign?
No.
If anyone, including any board member or employee of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, had asked that Sea Shepherd Australia not participate in the Operation Zero Tolerance campaign, would you have advised Sea Shepherd Australia to comply with that request?
No, I would have told the board of directors to deal with it as a board in relation to their corporation.
Now,
excuse me, I didn't catch the language of that. I'm not sure that the court reporter did either.
Okay.
Could you repeat what your advice would have been?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor. My answer was that no, I would not have done what somebody told us to do. I would have said, I took the question to be, what would my advice have been?
Yes.
My advice would have been to any directors to perform your role as directors. And that's me saying, Your Honour, the directors would have themselves, as directors of that Australian corporation, determined what the Australian corporation would do.
Right. Let me just, if I may follow up on that point. If Sea Shepherd, at this point, before there had been a campaign started, if Sea Shepherd U.S. and Paul Watson had joined in a plea to your board of directors to say something along the lines of, as you know, we have this injunction facing us from a U.S. court, we are subject to it. We are concerned that if actions occur in the Southern Ocean that violate the terms of this injunction, that we may be held responsible, and this may affect the future viability of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in all of its global endeavors, and we ask that you consider abiding by the terms of the injunction and do as much as you can, perhaps, but still stay outside that 500-yard perimeter, do you think there would be anything that would have prohibited the directors from concluding that that was a reasonable step to take?
No, Your Honor, of course not. They would have considered that, and that would have been absolutely effective. Remembering at this stage that I don't believe that anyone, not even the Australian directors, would have said that they intended to go within the 500-yard limit. But the hypothetical question you asked, Your Honour, the only thing I can be certain of saying to you, Your Honour, is that the Australian directors would have considered it for the purpose of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. And if someone, anyone, Your Honour, had said, gee whiz, why don't you just not do the voyage this year, that would have been a factor which the Australian directors would, of course, considered. But ultimately, it was a decision for the Australian directors. That was the question I thought I was being asked.
Yes, that is the question, and I appreciate your answer. Thank you. Continue.
Mr. McMullen, did Mr. Watson ever participate in any more board meetings after December 27, 2012?
No.
And did Mr. Morey ever participate in any other board members after December 27, 2012?
No, and I don't regard that Mr. Morey participated in the 27 December board meeting either. I believe he was present.
Now, and I'm sure that you will be asked this question later. Was the decision of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited to participate in Operation Zero Tolerance an attempt by Australia to assist Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson to evade the injunction?
No, it was Sea Shepherd Australia Limited doing that operation itself.
And does the board of directors of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited also consider the financial resources of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited in making such
yes.
decisions?
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the current composition of Sea Shepherd Australia. Are there any non-Australians currently serving on the board of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
No.
Have there ever, since December 27, 2012, have there ever been any other non-Australians serving on the board of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited?
No.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, move on to January of this year, January 13. Did you ever receive a letter, a copy of a letter that was written by Mr. Newport from Miller Nash to Charles Morey?
Yes.
And I'll call your attention to Exhibit D-647. Is that document in front of you, Mr. McMullen?
Just coming up. Here it is.
Now, do you recognize that letter dated February 2nd, 2013?
Yes, I did that letter. I sent that to Mr. Newbert.
Okay. And why did you believe that it was appropriate for you to respond to a letter written by Mr. Newbert to Charles Morey?
At some point, I became aware of the letter from Miller Nash. It was probably Charles Morey would have telephoned me or emailed me. I don't remember. But having received that letter, I discussed it with the Australian board, and then I wrote as Australian lawyer to Miller Nash to set out the position as Sea Shepherd Australia Limited saw it.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't catch the last part of that.
Having seen the letter from Miller Nash, that letter there is Sea Shepherd Australia Limited writing to Miller Nash through Sea Shepherd Australia's lawyers, who was me, saying what Sea Shepherd Australia Limited saw the position to be.
And what was Sea Shepherd Australia Limited's position expressed to Mr. Newbert?
In that letter, I'm saying to Mr. Newbert, the Sea Shepherd Australia Limited is an Australian company incorporated in Australia. The Sea Shepherd Australia Board had resolved back in 27 December that it would be the one to perform the Operation Zero Tolerance campaign, that Paul Watson was no longer a director of Sea Shepherd Australia, that Bob Brown would be the primary leader of the campaign, Jeff Hansen would be responsible for running it, and then we recorded Sea Shepherd Australia's position, and I can't quite see it on the letter, but it was generally to the effect that we respectfully, thanks to that I can now say it, we respectfully said that we were beyond the reach of the USA courts, that we would not therefore see ourselves as bound by that order.
Now, before you, did you mail the letter, have the letter mailed, Mr. McMullen, to Mr. Newbert?
Yes, I would have emailed it, I'm guessing.
Now, before sending the letter by email and post, did you ever have a discussion about the content of that letter with any employee at Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, including Susan Hartland?
No, I would have told Mr. Morrow that I would be sending that response, but I don't believe I ever spoke to Susan Hartland or anyone else at Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in relation to that letter.
And is it you're not telling this court, I want to be clear in my own mind, that Mr. Morrow had any hand in drafting that letter, are you?
No, definitely not. Mr. Morrow would have told me that he'd received it and he would have sent it to me. But I would have answered that letter. I would have prepared that letter. I would have shown it and discussed it with the Australian, with Jeff Hansen and Bob Brown, I'm guessing. But certainly I was 100% responsible for the contents of that letter.
Could we, I'd like to show you Defendant Exhibit 660, please. Let's go to the second page of that document, please. Have you ever seen this document before, Mr. McMullen?
Yes.
And was this document sent to you by anyone at Sea Shepherd Australia?
I don't remember. I'm guessing it would have been sent to me by Jeff Hansen. It may have even been sent to me, but I don't remember.
Now, did you discuss Ms. Gady's letter with Mr. Brown and Mr. Hansen?
I don't remember that, but I certainly would have. I would expect that I did.
Now, I'm sure you'll be asked this question, and so I'll just ask it myself. After receiving that letter, did you ever consider telling Mr. Hansen or Mr. Brown, Sea Shepherd Australia, withdraw from this the Operation Zero Tolerance campaign?
I don't remember ever making that suggestion, no.
And why not, Mr. McMullen?
Again, I don't remember, but again, it would have been a decision for the Australian Corporation, one that we'd already discussed back in December. I can't imagine that there would have been any change in the aims of the decisions we took from December, but I don't remember.
Was this letter brought to the attention of the entire board? Of Sea Shepherd Australia?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I remember seeing it. I don't remember exactly how I came to. And the entire board back then would have been Jeff Hansen, Bob Brown, Laura Dakin, and me. All of us except Laura Dakin would have had a discussion of that at the time, I believe, Your Honor. Laura Dakin, from time to time, would be in different parts of the world, and so we would not necessarily have rung her up and said, hey, Laura, what do you think? But I believe I would have discussed that letter with Jeff Hansen and Bob Brown at the time, Your Honor.
Now, I asked you a moment ago about whether there would be any reason why the Sea Shepherd Australian Board of Directors could not, if they chose in the interests of Sea Shepherd Australia, to respect a request by Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to comply with the 500-yard perimeter or any actions taken in the Southern Ocean. And you said, yeah, they could have considered it. And I see here there was exactly that kind of a request in this letter. Did you understand that this was a legitimate request by Sea Shepherd Conservation Society for assistance from Sea Shepherd Australia so that Sea Shepherd U.S. would not possibly be liable?
Yes, I did. And I don't doubt that even if asked that question today, the Australian directors would say, look, one of the options is we just forget the whole thing. I just don't remember us ever actually deciding, other than, Your Honour, back then, to do the campaign. Do I think that we set out to get within 500 yards? I absolutely think we did not. But did I think that we said, hey, let's just, maybe we should just stop the campaign? I don't remember ever having that discussion, Your Honour.
Right. Well, I wasn't asking you whether you should stop the campaign. And this letter doesn't say stop the campaign. What this letter asks would be if you would not take actions that might violate the injunction, if I read it correctly. Do you want to take another look at this letter?
I'm reading it right now, and you're right, Your Honor. That's exactly what it does say. Again, Your Honor, I'm doing it from memory. I absolutely remember seeing it and discussing it, but I don't remember taking any particular change to our previously chosen course as a result of it, Your Honour.
I'm sorry.
We certainly could have.
The court reporter needs you to... I'm sorry.
Can you just read the last part?
Okay. Here's what we got, so you can fill in the rest. It said, again, Your Honor, I'm doing it from memory. I absolutely remember seeing it and discussing it, but I don't remember taking any particular...
We don't remember taking, Your Honor, any particular action different to what we had previously decided to do as a result of it. And I then said, Your Honor, we certainly could have. The directors could easily have decided to go this way or that way, having had this request from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. But, in fact, I don't believe that we'd ever actually set out to get within 500 yards. Maybe it didn't even occur to us that we were going to do that, but I'm doing it all from memory, Your Honor.
You know, I understand that. But you've testified so clearly about all the events that have led up to this point, and I find it puzzling. I'm trying to understand in my own mind, because you're obviously a serious person and a lawyer, and you take your job seriously, especially as your fiduciary responsibility that you acknowledged. And here you have, as we read it now, a request from Sea Shepherd U.S. saying, we're worried about the continuing viability of our organization if there are further violations of this injunction. And I understand that you might have chosen to take an action that would have imperiled Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, but it seems likely, to me at least, that you would have seriously considered this request and taken a formal position as a corporation when you received this kind of a formal request. And did that not occur?
Your Honor, I absolutely promise you that we take our role seriously, and I promise you that we would have carefully looked at any requests that came from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society on this critical matter. My only thing I can say to you a year later is that, but I don't really believe that there was ever a moment where the Sea Shepherd Australian directors actually thought that we would be travelling within 500 yards of the whaling vessels. But I'm guessing if that was the reasoning behind whatever response we gave, I don't even remember what the response was, Your Honour, except to say that we certainly would have looked at this carefully and answered it.
Well, this, regrettably, this letter was sent out after there had already been an incursion, and I believe that was the reason why Sea Shepherd Conservation Society U.S. sent this letter. It was because, according to the testimony we've heard in this proceeding, the Sea Shepherd Board had learned that there had been an incursion, and that changed everything, and they sent this plea to Sea Shepherd Australia to please don't violate the injunction, because if you do so, you're imperiling us. And I'm paraphrasing this letter, but essentially that's what they said. And so I'm still trying to understand, because what you just said became moot, because it was no longer a question of whether the 500-year perimeter would be violated. It had been, and now they're saying to you, please do something. And I'm trying to understand why there wasn't at least some formal action respecting this letter. I know you said you read it, but how does that square, I guess, with what you said earlier about the fiduciary responsibility? Isn't it, I think, within at least within the charter of your organization to consider the viability of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is something that would be certainly synonymous with the purpose of your organization. So when they ask you for this, why no formal response?
Your Honor, I'm sorry, but there is another exhibit coming up that may answer some of the questions of the court.
All right.
That would be helpful. I don't okay. mean to interrupt.
Well, counsel has advised me that there may be an answer to my question in testimony that's about to occur. So I will turn the microphone over to her, and we'll proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to call your attention to D-667, please. Mr. McMullen, do you see this document that's in front of you? It's previously been entered as Defendant's Exhibit 667.
Yes, I do.
Do you ever recall seeing this email dated February
15, 2013? Yes, I remember seeing it.
Did you provide any, this purports to be, there is an email from Jeff Hansen to Chaco Press, John McMullen, Bob Brown, Ray, letter from Sea Shepherd U.S. Board of Directors to Sea Shepherd Australia. Do you see that in the subject
yes,
line?
Yes, I do.
Now,
yes,
did you, the email is signed, Bob Brown, Chairperson, Sea Shepherd Australia Limited, and Jeff Hansen, Australian Director. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Did you provide any collaboration or input into this email directed to Ms. Marnie Gady in response to her February 11 letter?
I may have had a telephone conversation about it, but I didn't prepare that letter, no.
Okay. Did you review it before it was sent?
No.
Were you aware that it was going to be sent?
I don't remember being aware of it being before it was sent, no.
Okay. Does the, if you could take some time and review this email and let us know whether or not it accurately states the position of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
Your Honor, he's testified that he never saw the document, didn't draft it, and so now she wants him to
I'm going to sustain that objection.
This email reflects that you were copied on it. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you have any reason to believe that you would not have received the document?
No, I'm sure I would have received the document.
And was it your habit to read emails that you receive?
Yes.
If you could look at the document, please, and let us know whether or not it accurately states the position of Sea Shepherd Australia Limited in response to Ms. Gady's letter.
Same objection, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I need to...
The testimony was he wasn't consulted with it, so how could he know whether it accurately represents...
We're on the same... Which exhibit are we on now?
We're on 667, Your Honor.
Right. That I already sustained an objection to that. Essentially same question as I understand it, so...
If I could ask a couple of other questions, Your Honor. If you testified that it is your habit to review emails that you do receive, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yep.
And if you had read an email from Jeff Hansen that did not accurately reflect the position of Sea Shepherd Australia, would you have contacted him?
As a general proposition, yes, but I couldn't say every time no.
Okay. Do you know whether or not... Sea Shepherd Australia Limited is going to participate in a Southern Ocean campaign in 2014?
Yes, I do.
And is the name of that campaign Operation Relentless, to your knowledge?
Yes.
And is, do you believe, is that... Sea Shepherd Australia Limited's participation in Operation Relentless is prohibited by the Ninth Circuit injunction?
No.
And if you did believe that that Sea Shepherd Australia Limited's participation in Operation Relentless was barred by the Ninth Circuit injunction, what, if anything, would you do as the corporate lawyer?
For the sake of that question, if there was a reason why I thought anything that the corporation was about to do was prohibited by an order of a court, of course, I would say that we must not do it, both as a lawyer and as a director.
Now, I'd like to show you Exhibit 720 and 555. Have those come up on your screen yet?
Yes, I see them both.
All right. Now, do you recognize these documents?
Yes, I do.
And for the record, what are they?
720 is a document, it's a sublease. Effectively, it's the Government of Victoria as a department parks Victoria. It has
Mr. Newbert, I'm sorry, Mr. Newbert, Mr. McMullen, could you speak slower? Our court reporter's having difficulty. If you could start again,
And absolutely reasonable to say so. 720, entitled Deed of Consent to Sublease, is a sublease in relation to real estate an old wharf area with buildings on it in Williamstown, a seaside suburb of Melbourne. Parks Victoria, the owner of the land, is a government department of the Government of Victoria. Seaworks Foundation, the head lessee on that land, is a government body created to look after that general property. Sea Shepherd Australia Limited is executing a sublease of parts of that land in that document.
What's the purpose of the sublease?
The Seaworks land is disused. It's been unused for decades. It's an old shipyard, got old ship buildings and a wharf. Sea Shepherd Australia Limited has taken a sublease and intends to develop the old buildings to do marine repairs, have a marine museum eventually, to tie up the ships through the Australian winter, to have the voyages depart from there and arrive back there.
Did you perform the legal work for Sea Shepherd Australia to execute the sublease for the Seaworks property?
Yes.
And when did this transaction occur?
I don't really remember, but I'm guessing it was the end of 2012, somewhere around about there.
Under the...
The only reason I say that is because the ships arrived back there in March earlier this year.
Who is responsible under the sublease agreement for rental payments for the Seaworks lease?
Sea Shepherd Australia Limited.
So I have just a couple of other questions for you, Mr. McMullen. Has any board member, to your knowledge, of Sea Shepherd Australia ever conspired with any board member of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society or Paul Watson for the purpose of evading the Ninth Circuit injunction?
No.
Would it be, in your legal opinion, a breach of the fiduciary duty of any board member of Sea Shepherd Australia to assist Paul Watson or Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to violate or evade the Ninth Circuit injunction?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I tend to the witness. I have nothing further.
All right. I have a few additional questions for you that I'd just like to ask right now. Earlier in your testimony, you mentioned that when you first saw the injunction, you had already learned of Judge Kaczynski's remarks. Is that correct?
I think that is correct, Your Honor. Certainly around about that time. Judge Kaczynski's remarks were reported in the Australian press, that famous quote that you don't need a patch to be a pirate, that quote, something like that, was in the news, and that would have telegraphed to me that something had happened in relation to these proceedings.
So, is it your recollection that that affected how you initially reacted to the injunction?
I wasn't being disrespectful to Judge Kaczynski there. No, I just meant that I became aware of the injunction.
Okay, so let me refresh your memory. The injunction came out in December of 2012. The remarks that you're referring to came out in an opinion that was issued in the late winter, early spring of 2013, probably at least 2 months after the injunction. So... I'm wondering if there was anything else, because those remarks weren't around when the injunction came out. Is there something else you had in your mind in terms of responding to the injunction?
No, Your Honor, that's my memory failing me right there. I don't really remember. I wrongly associated those two things. something made me aware that there was an injunction, Your Honor, and that's, that was pretty famous in Australia at that moment.
It will come as no comfort to you that these memory issues don't improve with age.
I know that, Your Honor.
I have just a couple more questions. There were some U.S. citizen volunteers on ships that were fairly close to you at the time that the injunction came out, or shortly thereafter. Correct? Do I have that right?
Your Honor, I bet there were. I'm sure there were. I wouldn't know, Your Honor.
Did any U.S. citizen volunteers ever seek your legal advice about what does this injunction have to do with me? I'm an American. What do I do?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't remember that, no.
Okay. One last question, or several questions, or topic. Do you have a copy of the injunction close at hand? Or can we get one up, Exhibit 1, so that you can take a look at it? Do you see the words of the injunction?
It's up there, Your Honor. I think we're currently on. Here we go.
All right.
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
So the injunction reads, defendant Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson and any party acting in concert with them are enjoined from taking certain actions, including the 500-yard perimeter. So I'm directing your attention in particular to and any party acting in concert with them. Now, you testified a little while ago that you didn't think that this applied to you because Sea Shepherd Conservation, it applied to Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and Paul Watson. They're within the jurisdiction of the U.S. courts. And did you consider the effect of the language in any party acting in concert with them?
Mate, I don't know that I did, Your Honor. I think I was really just limiting, maybe incorrectly, I think I was just really limiting my analysis to an Australian corporation on the high seas. But Your Honor may be right and I may be wrong.
All right. So let me ask you this question. We might spend weeks arguing about the legal implications of that language and whether in fact it would extend to an Australian corporation, and you just expressed your own view that you're not really sure of the exact effect of that language. But from a practical standpoint, did it ever occur to you, and did you ever give advice that because there's this language in the injunction that says, and any party acting in concert with them, that if Sea Shepherd Australia had taken acts that would violate that 500-yard perimeter or anything else in that injunction, that somehow and in some manner, some U.S. writ of enforcement of some sort might be sought in the Australian courts to enforce a judgment of a United States court that would enjoin parties acting in concert and thereby at least create a legal issue for Sea Shepherd Australia.
Your Honor, I absolutely do not believe that I addressed with anyone or analysed the words and any party acting in concert with them. However, I would have addressed the prospect of an action happening in Australia, and I would have expressed an opinion about the likelihood or non-likelihood of that for other commercial reasons. But the answer to your question is no, Your Honor. I didn't address those words specifically, no. Perhaps I should have, but I didn't.
All right. I believe you testified earlier that you didn't think there was much likelihood of any success in an Australian court for the reasons you expressed earlier, because of the earlier injunction. All right. We'll leave it at that. I think I understand your testimony, and I certainly have no reason to believe that you're not being entirely respectful to the court. So I want to allay any concern you have along those lines. And unlike an earlier witness, I know you know what allay means. All right.
Your Honor, I failed to do one thing. I would like to move to for Exhibits 505, 589, 647, 660, and 667 to be moved into evidence.
Any objection? No objection, they'll be admitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I have just a few questions for Mr. McMullen.
All right.
Mr. McMullen, I'm Tim Lay, and I represent Paul Watson. I'm not exactly sure where I'm supposed to be looking. Anyway, are you okay to go for another few minutes?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You indicated that Laura Dakin was a director, but she was out of town a good bit of the time.
Yes.
So how did you operate in her absence? Did she give a proxy to one of the other directors such that you could conduct business, or how did that work?
No. Laura Dakin, we would always copy her in on any board material, and from time to time she would participate. But she and I had an understanding that if she was for any reason unavailable to join us on a board meeting, and it was only in respect to board meetings that I would have had any connection with Ms. Dakin, I would record that she was an apology. However, I was at a board meeting 3 or 4 weeks ago in Sydney, and she was present.
Okay. When we were looking at Exhibit 667, which was the response that Mr. Hansen and Mr. Brown sent to Marnie Gade to the request that Sea Shepherd Australia stand down, do you have that document in mind, or we can put it up again?
I can remember it, yep.
Did you notice that went out over the signature lines of Mr. Hansen and Mr. Brown?
Yes, I did.
Was Mr. Brown the chairman of the board of Sea Shepherd Australia at that time?
Yes.
And was he, with Mr. Hansen, authorized to speak in behalf of Sea Shepherd Australia?
Yes. Certainly in the context of the Operation Zero Tolerance, he would have been, and Mr. Hansen would have been the only ones who would have been.
Okay. Are the Southern Ocean campaigns the largest and the most prominent campaigns that Sea Shepherd Australia is involved with?
Yes, far and away, yes.
And that's been the case for at least since 2007, is that correct?
Yes.
And are those campaigns important to Sea Shepherd Australia's fundraising?
I would say they are predominantly the only, generally proposition-only matters that are driving the fundraising in Australia, but, Mr. Lay, I wouldn't know.
Okay, but in your view, they are important.
I believe, as a director, and just from seeing what I've seen, that they are absolutely the most important.
Okay. In the December 27th, December 24th and December 27th conversations and then board meeting, did the Sea Shepherd Australia directors want to go forward with us with Operation Zero Tolerance?
Yes.
Did the board view running Operation Zero Tolerance as consistent with Sea Shepherd Australia's purposes and objectives, corporate purposes and objectives?
Yes.
And did the board consider that participating in and then running Operation Zero Tolerance, that would boost the prominence of Sea Shepherd Australia going forward?
Yes.
Was one of the reasons for the sublease that we looked at for the facility in Williamstown, was that to facilitate the Southern Ocean campaigns?
One of the reasons, yes.
And that was a Sea Shepherd Australia project, and it is going forward. The development work that you described, that's a Sea Shepherd Australia project, correct?
As far as I'm aware, it's 100% Sea Shepherd Australia Limited. I've never been aware of anyone other than Sea Shepherd Australia Limited discussing that project.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. McMullen.
Right. Mr. Newbert.
Hello, Mr. McMullen. You and I met last week in your deposition. Do you recall that?
Yes, Mr. Newbert.
I want to, start at the beginning. You don't have any knowledge, do you, of how Sea Shepherd Conservation Society ran its operations, do you?
No.
And you don't have any knowledge as to whether or not Sea Shepherd Conservation Society routinely uses the assets of its affiliated entities that bear the Sea Shepherd name, do you?
No.
And you don't know how much money Sea Shepherd Conservation Society receives from Sea Shepherd Australia, do you?
No.
And you don't know that Mr. Jeff Hansen refers to Nicholas McConney as our CFO, do you?
Check to the form, Your Honor.
No.
Overruled.
And you have no knowledge of the financial interrelationships or financial interdependence among all of the various Sea Shepherd entities around the world, do you?
Objection, Your Honor. States facts that are not in evidence.
Yeah. Well, there's really no testimonial significance to these answers to these questions, other than sort of a negative, but overruled. Continue.
Do you have any? Okay, thank you. So when you refer to Sea Shepherd Conservation, when you refer to Sea Shepherd Australia as a separate legal and distinct entity, you don't have any knowledge as to whether or not it acts as an agent for its principal, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, do you?
Objection, Your Honor. Misstates his prior testimony.
Hang on. Sustained.
Does Australia recognize the law of principal and agency? Or principal and agent, I should say?
Yes.
You were asked whether or not it was Sea Shepherd Australia was a subsidiary, but under Australia law, Sea Shepherd Australia could be an agent of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, could it not?
Yes.
Okay. Now I want to go back to the timeline. We have that you learned of the injunction. And the first thing that occurred that you told us about was the Christmas Eve telephone conference. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And on that conference was Mr. Watson, Mr. Morey, yourself, and Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
And that was on December 24?
Yes.
If you would look at Exhibit 130, please. Who's going to call up exhibits here? Thank you. Can you see Exhibit 130?
Yes, sir.
And this is an email of December 19, 5 days before the Christmas Eve conference. And this email says that Mr. Watson just spoke with Australian Senator Bob Brown, and Mr. Bob Brown is quite willing to take over from me and lead the campaign. Were you aware that Mr. Watson had such a conversation with Bob Brown?
Your Honor, I'm going to object because there's no evidence that this witness has ever seen this email, Exhibit Plaintiff's 130. His name is not on the document.
Overruled. He just asked if he'd seen it. You can answer that question.
No, Your Honor.
And did Mr. Watson inform you that he had such a conversation with Mr. Bob Brown at any time prior to the Christmas Eve conversation?
No.
Did you ever have any discussion with Mr. Watson why he first turned to the idea of turning the campaign over to Bob Brown as opposed to turning the campaign over to Sea Shepherd Australia?
Yeah, objection, Your Honor, to the using the word turn over.
Overruled.
Mr. Newbert, Mr. Your Honor, I never had a conversation with Paul Watson at any time up between the time of the injunction and 24 December telephone conference that I can remember.
Okay, so you had no communication with Mr. Watson between the date of the injunction and the Christmas Eve conversation, is that correct?
That's my recollection, yes.
Okay. Had you had any conversations with Mr. Morey between the injunction and the Christmas Eve conversation?
I certainly may have. I don't remember specifically, but I certainly would have spoken to Mr. Morey at some point on the telephone. I may have rung him. He may have rung me.
Okay. If the witness could be shown Exhibit 148, please. Can you see Exhibit 148, Mr. McMullen?
Yes.
And Exhibit 148 is a 12/22 email from Mr. Jeff Hansen to Mr. Watson and copied to you, and this is 2 days before the Christmas Eve conversation. Do you note that?
Yes.
Did you read Exhibit 148 at the time you received it?
I don't remember it, but I would have, yes.
Okay, and so you knew that Mr. Hansen was proposing a course of action to Mr. Watson and seeking Mr. Watson's consent to Mr. Hansen's proposed course of action. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
And did you always regard Mr. Watson as being the person whose consent must be had before any of these proposals about the takeover of the campaign by Sea Shepherd Australia occurred, that Mr. Watson's consent had to be obtained?
Two separate questions in there, Mr. Newbert. As a requirement of the Australian board, no. Respect for Paul Watson's position in the Sea Shepherd movement and the Sub-Nation campaign, I would have regarded as a very important issue.
Okay. The witness could be shown Exhibit 647. And this is your letter of February 2, 2013. And you summarize in Exhibit 647 the acts which had been taken by Sea Shepherd Australia, do you not?
Yes.
Now, you say at in paragraph numbered Arabic 2 that the board of directors resolved at a board meeting on the date indicated that from January 1, 2013, Sea Shepherd Australia would take over from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society primary responsibility. My question to you is, how could Sea Shepherd Australia resolve to take over something that was being run by somebody else?
Mr. Nevitt, that may be my inelegant language. I was merely attempting to say that at that board meeting, that corporation had decided it would be responsible for that campaign. It may be that I've expressed that poorly.
Well, you would agree with me, would you not, that the Sea Shepherd Australia board could resolve whatever it wanted, but without the cooperation of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, Sea Shepherd Australia's resolutions were meaningless.
Yes, I agree.
All right, thank you. And then paragraph Arabic 3 in Exhibit 647 says that Mr. Watson resigned and was replaced by Bob Brown. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
And that's the order in which things occurred, was it not?
I don't remember exactly, but my recollection is it was both those things happened at that meeting. As to the order, I don't remember, Mr. Nevitt.
Well, let's go to the minutes, which I think are Exhibit 587. Excuse me, it's Exhibit 589.
Yes, I see that.
And paragraph Arabic 2.1 says Laura Dakin was an apology. She was an apology because she was a cook aboard the Steve Irwin at the time, wasn't she?
I don't know.
Do you know whether she was aboard the Steve Irwin?
I don't know.
She routinely cruised on board the Steve Irwin, does she not?
Mr. Neville, I don't know where Laura Dakin is in the scheme of things. She probably is. I just don't know.
I'm not meaning now. I meant at the time you called this board meeting. You had to give notice to her, didn't you?
We emailed her, and she and I had had a previous arrangement that if she wasn't there, I would include her as an apology.
And that's what you did?
That's what I did, yes.
All right. And then we have Arabic 5, which has the proposal being discussed and the factors in favor of the proposal. Then we have a board resolution in bold. And then we have changes to the board of directors. Do you see that?
Yes, I do.
Does that help refresh your recollection that the order of business was to pass the resolution and then Mr. Watson stepped down?
I don't remember it, but I believe that we would have done it in the order of those minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Watson, I think as you told the court, he voted to approve the resolution, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And one of the factors that the board considered and discussed in terms in preparing to adopt this resolution was the fact that you've noted in paragraph Arabic 3 in 5.2 that Sea Shepherd Conservation Society is obligated not to come within 500 yards. Do you see that?
Yes.
And so that was a principal motivating factor of Sea Shepherd Conservation Australia in adopting this resolution, correct?
Yes.
And during this board meeting, Mr. Morey was in attendance, was he not, as a visitor?
Yes.
Did he ever encourage Sea Shepherd Australia to take any different course of action?
My recollection is that Mr. Morey didn't speak at that meeting, but the answer to your question is no.
But if he had chosen to spoken, he would have been allowed to speak, would he not?
I believe so.
And I think you told us that by the date of this meeting, it had already been agreed at the Christmas Eve meeting in the telephone conversation in which Mr. Morey was present that this is what was going to happen. Correct?
Yes.
And so the actions taken in Exhibit 589 were, in essence, official actions to memorialize an agreement which had been struck on Christmas Eve. Correct?
Not quite. It's the board resolving to give effect to the actions that were agreed at on that meeting, yes.
Well, you were a participant in that conversation.
Yes.
Mr. Watson was a participant in that conversation, and Mr. Hansen was a participant in that conversation, and the three of you constituted a vote, if you chose to vote, that would have enacted the resolution if it had been proposed then, correct?
Correct.
If the witness could be shown Exhibit 159. If we could go to the second page of Exhibit 159. There is the second page of Exhibit 159. This is an email from Hansen to Mr. Watson in which Mr. Hansen says, "Hi, Paul." And then it goes on to say, "John and I discussed that one of the points we are trying to make," and it goes on. Can you read that to yourself?
Yes, I see that.
Okay. And did you discussed the matters indicated there with Mr. Hansen?
Yes.
All right. And did Sea Shepherd Australia ultimately adopt a resolution which incorporated these two items that Bob Brown and Jeff Hansen together would act as leaders of the campaign?
Yes.
And that was done, I think, sometime around January 4?
Correct.
Thank you. Now, going back to Exhibit 647, if we could do that for a minute, please.
I see that.
As of the date of Exhibit 647, Mr. Watson was no longer a client of yours, was he?
Mr. Watson wasn't a client of mine at any time. Back then, there was a moment where I believe I may have been doing some visa landing work for Mr. Watson, but I wouldn't have called Mr. Watson a client, no.
Well, you said you were doing some what work for Mr. Watson? Was it immigration work?
There was a time when I was assisting, I counted myself as the Australian lawyer for Paul Watson, and it was when he was due to return. I think that was substantially later than this, but other than that work, I don't believe I was Paul Watson's lawyer.
Well, weren't you, in fact, Mr. Watson's lawyer in early December 2012 when Mr. Watson was considering whether or not he could come into Australia without the fear of being arrested?
I just lost track of the dates, Mr. Newbert. From time to time, I have been the lawyer for Paul Watson in relation to matters about him coming into Australia, yes.
And you were providing that legal assistance to Mr. Watson in early December 2012, were you not?
Look, I may have, Mr. Newbert, I don't remember the dates. I've done that a number of times.
Well, do you recall your deposition being taken last week, and I showed you Exhibit A, which we have marked for purposes of this proceeding as Exhibit 360, and I can call up Exhibit 360 for you, but let's see if we can just refresh your recollection. Last week you told me that you rendered an opinion on or about December 3, 2012 to Mr. Watson, in which you concluded in your legal opinion that it was unlikely that he would be detained if he came into Australia.
Your Honor, I'm going to object, instruct the witness not to answer on the basis of the attorney-client privilege.
Your Honor, this was the subject of deposition testimony last week.
I was not at that deposition. I would have made the same instruction at that time had I been there, Your Honor. I think this is...
Who was representing Who was representing Mr. Watson at the deposition at that time?
I believe my partner, Mr. Jordan.
I was there, Your Honor.
All right.
In other words, this, whether or not there was an instruction at that time, this is plainly lawyer-client communication.
Your Honor, it goes...
Let Mr. Lehner make his point, and then I'll hear you.
What he's asking about is lawyer-client advice to Mr. Watson as an individual that is not related to the subject matter of this case.
All right. So thus far, Mr. Lay, all I've heard is the question whether he acted as his lawyer, and I haven't heard any question about the substance of any attorney-client privilege matter. Maybe I misunderstood.
The question, as I heard it, Your Honor, included in it a description of the advice.
All right. Let me hear. Mr. Newbert, where are you going with this?
I'm going with this to the very limited proposition, and let me hand up to the court Exhibit 360.
I've read all of the first page. I haven't read the From Andrew Darby part of the second page. Do I need to do that?
No.
Right. Where, again, what are you trying to establish here?
That it was unlikely that Mr. Watson would be arrested, and he could have gotten off with Steve Irwin.
Okay. I don't think that that's particularly helpful to my evaluation of the proceedings here. Can you tell me why it should be?
Well, the whole defense of Mr. Watson is predicated on this dilemma that he didn't have any choice but to remain aboard the Steve Irwin. This is evidence that he had lots of choices.
Your Honor, in addition to this being privileged, it is hearsay. It's being offered for the truth of the matter asserted.
The witness is right there.
And is not relevant, more fundamentally, Your Honor.
Your Honor, on the basis of privilege, look at the addressees. If it was privileged, it's been waived by the persons to whom it's been sent. With respect to privilege, there was no objection at the time of the deposition. With respect to privilege, there's been no objection since the deposition was published and everybody received a copy of it.
Okay. I'll allow the questioning. Overrule the objection.
Mr. McMullen, do you recall that last week I showed you Exhibit A, which I represent to you as identical to Exhibit 360, and that was your opinion that you provided to Mr. Watson on or about December 3, 2012?
Yes.
And your opinion has not changed since, has it?
No.
Thank you. Now, so going back to Exhibit 647, at the time of Exhibit 647, Mr. Watson was neither a client nor was he a board member of Sea Shepherd Australia, correct?
Mr. Nippert, are we talking December 2012 there, or February?
I'm changing time periods, so let's be clear. I'm looking at Exhibit 647. It's your February 2 response to me. When my letter was sent to you about the first incursion and you responded to me. So we're talking February 2013.
Yes. At that time, no, Mr. Watson was not a client.
I am looking at and can show you if you need to be shown. Well, why don't we pull it up, Erica, and we'll mark it as the next in order.
Yes, I see that.
And we'll refer to this as Exhibit 362, which I'm told is the next in order, and I'll hand one up to the court.
Would you like an exhibit?
Please.
Do you see Exhibit 362, Mr. McMullen?
I'm looking at the email, 1 February, 14:39 p.m. I see that.
Right, and the subject is letter from Miller Nashray, violation of injunction, and you write, Dear All, and you sent this to Mr. Morey. And then the second email address, that Tomo Paul at Hotmail, that's Bob Brown's email address, is it not?
Yes, correct.
And you sent it to Bob Brown, Jeff Hansen, Laura Dakin, and we know that Bob Brown and Jeff Hansen and Laura Dakin are all directors, and you sent it to Mr. Morey, Sea Shepherd Conservation Society's lawyer. And did you know that at the time that Mr. Morey also represented Mr. Watson?
I may have known it, but I would have presumed that he was acting for Paul Watson, yes.
Okay, and you sent it to Paul Watson, did you see that?
Yes, I did.
Why did you send it to Paul Watson?
I don't remember, Mr. Nivett. I can only guess that I was sending it to everyone.
Well, you sent it to the directors of Sea Shepherd Australia. You sent it to the lawyer for Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Mr. Watson had resigned from Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Mr. Watson had resigned from Sea Shepherd Australia. Mr. Watson had resigned from every position he may have once had with Sea Shepherd Australia and Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Why did you feel it necessary to get him to review and comment on your letter to me?
I don't recall. I can only say that I guess I was sending it to everyone.
Let's change topics. When you say, before I do that though, when you say to everyone, do you mean everyone who needed to know?
I'm doing it from memory, Mr. Newbert. I would have, I believe, erred on the side of copying in people who had previously been involved in the email communications.
But you're just speculating, aren't you?
Yes, Mr. Newbert, I am.
Okay.
Excuse me, I just wanted to get a sense, since we're after four now, and we, I'm hoping to complete this witness's testimony today.
Oh, we will. I just have two topics.
Proceed.
My next topic, Mr. McMullen, is the film. Last week we talked about this in your deposition, and I'll try to be brief. You prepared contracts that replaced contracts that film crew aboard the ships had with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, did you not?
Yes.
And you were aware that those film crew had those contracts with Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, but you were requested to prepare replacement contracts that would substitute Sea Shepherd Australia for Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, correct?
Objection to the form, Your Honor. Compound question.
Sustained.
Did you prepare substitute contracts?
Yes.
And at the time you prepared those substitute contracts, the parties to the contracts would have been Sea Shepherd Australia on the one hand and Sea Shepherd and the film crew, correct?
I believe so. I never saw that, but I believe so.
All right. Well, when you say you never saw that, you saw the contracts that you drafted, didn't you? We didn't hear an answer.
Yes. Oh. Sorry. Yes.
All right. And you understood that those were substitute contracts?
Yes, to the extent I understood that the previous contractual arrangements would have been between those production staff and Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. I just had never seen any agreements in relation to that.
Thank you for the clarification. And you are aware, are you not, that there was no contract between Animal Planet and Sea Shepherd Australia for the filming of Operation Zero Tolerance? You knew that too, correct?
Correct.
And you know that during the course of this litigation, the plaintiffs requested film footage taken during Operation Zero Tolerance, correct?
Correct.
And you stated in a letter, which I don't think we need to look at, that some would be turned over but not all. Do you recall that?
That's correct.
And then eventually some film footage was supplied to Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and it made its way to us. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Do you know why Sea Shepherd Australia refused to turn over all of the film?
Sea Shepherd Australia concluded that it did not have to provide any film, it not being a party to this litigation. However, it agreed to provide some film, and the answer to your question as to why it took out other parts of the film, if that's where you're heading, Mr. Newbert, is there are other parts of the film which might include, for example, Japanese citizens who may not wish to be identified, and other parts where it was a substantive film and we concluded it was nothing to be gained and we chose not to.
Well, excuse me, I'm just looking at the real-time reporting, and he did say that there were some citizens who did not wish their identities, wish themselves to be identified. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I just want the record to reflect that.
Who told you that?
Could you repeat that one, Mr. Yu?
Yeah, who told you that there were some people who didn't want their identities revealed?
Shannon Mann.
Okay, and do you know how much of the film reflects that, if any?
I don't know.
Okay, you don't know what's on the film, do you? Because you've never seen it.
No, never.
And can you think of any reason why, if the film would exonerate or help exonerate Sea Shepherd Conservation Society or Mr. Watson, why Sea Shepherd Australia wouldn't freely cooperate with Sea Shepherd US?
I can think of no reason.
If the witness could be shown Exhibit 150, please. Mr. McMullen, do you have on the screen there Exhibit 150?
Yes, I do.
And you're welcome to look at as much of this as you care to, but I'll summarize it. It's some invoices that apparently you were seeking to have paid for having appellate fees that you had advanced on behalf of Sea Shepherd Australia paid. Do you recall seeking reimbursement for such payments?
Yes.
All right. And you were seeking reimbursement from Sea Shepherd Australia, who was your client and on behalf of whom you had advanced those fees, correct?
Correct.
And if you can look at the first page of Exhibit 150, where in the middle of that page it's from Jeff Hansen to Nicholas McConney, and do you see there where Jeff is seeking Mr. McConney's approval to pay your invoices?
Yes.
Were you aware that your invoices had to be reviewed and approved by Sea Shepherd Conservation Society to in order to be paid?
No.
And the appeal fees that are referenced here are appeal fees that Sea Shepherd Australia is incurring in connection with its attempt to reverse a tax panel or tax court judge's decision that Sea Shepherd Australia didn't qualify for a tax-exempt status. Is that correct?
Correct. Typically, donor gift recipient status. Where someone...
Donor. Stop. Can you begin again?
Donor gift recipient status.
Would you repeat your answer so we get it complete?
Sorry, I was trying to be correct. The refusal related to donor, D-O-N-O-R, gift, G-I-F-T, recipient, R-E-C-I-P-I-E-N-T, status. The status which allows donors to get the tax deduction.
And until that legal effort is successful, people who donate to Sea Shepherd Australia don't get to deduct the donations from their taxes. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. That's all that I have. Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. McMullen? Looks like you're not quite done yet, Mr. McMullen. The lawyers are lining up for to have another crack at you.
Can we show the witness Exhibit 361 again, please? This is your draft response to Mr. Newport's letter to Sea Shepherd Australia. Do you recall that?
Not quite up yet, sir.
Oh.
361.
I have it as 361. It might be 362.
I can show it.
Yeah, I think.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Newport was asking you about the people that you sent this draft letter to a moment ago. Recall that?
I'm looking, sir, at an email.
Oh, that's not the same.
December.
Who's doing this?
Excuse me, I don't seem to have 361 either.
It's 362.
It is an email then, yes, that we're talking about?
I can...
I see a letter. I see an email 1 February 2013, 14:39 p.m.
Yes, that's the one.
All right. Continue.
Sorry for the confusion, Your Honor. Okay, so Mr. Newport was asking you essentially why did you send this to the people who are listed on the recipient line, correct? Do you recall
yes.
that?
And I remember that question.
Did you understand the injunction to apply to Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Yes.
And did you understand it also to apply to Mr. Watson personally?
Yes.
And so did you understand that your letter might be of interest to the persons to whom the injunction applied?
Yes.
And so was that why you sent this to Mr. Morey as the lawyer for Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
Perhaps, but I'm doing it from recollection.
Okay.
I think that, in fact, I got the actual Mill and Nash letter from Mr. Morey. I don't know. I can't remember more than that.
And isn't it the case that the reason you sent it to Mr. Watson was that he also was named in the injunction and therefore might be interested as to what Sea Shepherd Australia was saying?
Perhaps, but I don't remember.
Okay. Mr. Watson no longer was a member of the Board of Directors of Sea Shepherd Australia as of February 1, 2013, was he?
Correct, he was not.
And he had at that time no involvement in the operations or activities of Sea Shepherd Australia, correct?
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you.
Mr. McMullen, I have very few short questions for you. Calling your attention to the board meeting on December 27, 2012, can you tell me why Mr. Morey attended this meeting?
I would have invited him, having been on the telephone conference on 24 December. That was all.
Why did you believe that it was important for Mr. Morey to attend?
I'm doing it from memory, would have presumed that everyone needed to know what was happening.
Now, did Mr. Morey ever have a discussion with you about the seriousness of the Ninth Circuit injunction?
Yes, we would have had telephone calls from time to time. He might have rung me, I might have rung him. I don't really remember, but yes.
And did Mr. Morey vote at all during the December 27 board meeting?
No.
Now, I'd like to call your attention to Exhibit 589.
if you could look at section 5.2, paragraph 2.
I see that.
Could you read that, please?
SSAL has always been involved in the Southern Ocean campaign and has always intended, eventually, to take over from SSCS the primary responsibility for running the Southern Ocean campaign.
Was the substance of what's contained in paragraph 5.2.2 discussed at the board meeting on December 27, 2012?
Yes.
Now, you were asked on cross-examination by Mr. Newbert whether or not it was possible for Sea Shepherd Australia, under Australian law, to ever be an agent of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Do you remember that question?
Yes, I do.
Are you aware of any circumstances in 2013 in which Sea Shepherd Australia has served as the agent for Sea Shepherd Conservation Society?
No.
And can you, in 2013, has Sea Shepherd Australia ever acted as the agent of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society for the purposes of violating the Ninth Circuit injunction?
No.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Is there anything further for this witness? All right. Mr. McMullen, court extends its thanks to you for appearing, taking time out of your early morning, and accommodating us. It was very helpful to hear what you had to say, and you're now excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Do we have any further business before we adjourn for the day?
I think, Your Honor, the only thing I'd like to raise is on the findings and recommendations, when would you like them?
Well, I thought we would address the timing next week. I think you will all be more informed, I think, after we hear from the remaining witnesses and see how many more facts there might be.
Yes. Your Honor, you asked us before the luncheon recess if we could get in touch with Mr. Steele. We have not been able to get in touch with him yet. There is a small possibility that he may be available on Monday. We are confirming that, but he will be in New York for 3 days and then available on the November 8th, which is a week from today.
That's Friday, and I am very reluctant to have a session on that day, so I'm hoping not to do that.
So should we arrange for Mr. Steele to come on Monday?
As matters sit now, I just don't think it's going to be helpful to the court to hear from him. So I will consider receiving his expert report, but I don't think it's going to be helpful for me to hear testimony.
Your Honor, then we would move to have his expert report to make an offer of proof with his expert report, which is Defendant's Exhibit 721.
As you know, Your Honor, we would object to that without the opportunity to cross-examine.
I'm going to take that into consideration, and I'm going to defer ruling on it. But your request is noted.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
I forgot to move the admissions of Exhibits 360 and 362, which I do now.
Any objection?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. 360, I thought it was 360 and 361. Yeah,
there's a little confusion here. Is there a 361, or have we?
361 is not used.
We marked an Exhibit 361 but did not use it.
All right. So, no, it is 360 and 362. The email from John McMullen to Charles Murray et al. Dated 2/1/2013 is Exhibit 362, just to clarify. Everybody on board with that? So do we have any objection to the admission of 360 and 362? Hearing none, they're admitted. Any other business? All right. I do have a question. It's now after, I guess it was Mr. Lay announced that Mr. Watson was intending to appear in person. I wanted to revisit the question of whether the attorneys now expect a larger audience than we had earlier anticipated. And Mr. Lay, do you have any sense?
I don't have any sense, Your Honor. I'm planning to be meeting with Mr. Watson over the weekend, and I can find out and advise the court on Monday.
All right. I'm just concerned for the security. We have the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals will be holding sessions next week, so the courtroom will be more crowded. There'll be lawyers traveling up to the other courtrooms to present oral argument and appeals. And the security staff, which is already short, will be called upon to do many, many things. And if there's a need for additional security, I want to be able to inform them so that they can operate, so that we don't delay the proceedings here trying to get people just in through the door.
I understand, Your Honor, and I will report what I'm able to find out on Monday.
All right. Well, we finished 1 week, and I think I'm very happy that we've accomplished so much in a week, and many thanks to all of you for your hard work. And I think it's been very helpful to the court to hear the testimony and the excellent questioning by counsel. So with that, we will adjourn for the weekend, and we will resume these proceedings on Monday morning at 9 o'clock. Thank you, and have a good weekend.